This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. Manuk Dentcher, Blue Bomber game day here on TSN 1290. Bombers host the Eskimos tonight. Full Manuk Dentcher pregame show coverage begins 5:30. Darren Bombing, Troy Westwood, Chris Walby, and the whole crew. Final preseason action, lots to come on that. Mayweather McGregor. It's on! Don Matthews has passed away, CFL legendary coach. And of course, the NHL expansion draft and the Winnipeg Jets and all that. And the 117th U.S. Open will begin this morning at Erin Hills. We'll maybe have some predictions and who the guys feel might get on a heater and win that one. Bob Weeks is going to join us, Milt Stegall, David Pagnata, and of course, a full hour of your phone calls coming up at 9 a.m. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Not too bad. Was out at the Wolseley Classic yesterday at Rossmere for Special Olympics. It was a bizarre day driving out there, and it's just like torrential. And it's like, oh my God, is there going to be any golf? And then just maybe 15 minutes before the shotgun start, the skies opened up, not a cloud to be seen. And then the wind picks up during the round, and in comes round one of wild dark clouds and lightning, and then all that dissipates again. Then the skies open up and it's blue sky, and then we see one mother of trouble coming like from the south sky. We finish a hole, the par three, I think the third hole, and we're looking down the fairway, and there is a black monster coming in the sky, and you could tell that it's pouring. And we're looking going, okay, we can try and finish this hole and get soaked, you know, getting back to the clubhouse, or we read the sky and we head in right now. And thankfully, we read the sky and just said, we're done. Drove to the parking lot. We just got our clubs in, and it just – and people were teasing us as we're driving back, right? We're like, we're done. It's going to rain. They're like, ah, you guys – and everybody just got destroyed. We're sitting cozy and warm in our cars as the torrential downpour came. But a fantastic fantastic event. Big kudos to all the volunteers, everyone that took part. Rossmere is a fantastic day, guys. So many folks right now that said, hey, I get up to drive to work for 40 minutes or an hour and 10 minutes and said, I need you guys. I listen to you guys every single morning. Thanks so much for entertaining and take it easy on Jim, all this sort of stuff. But so we got a bunch of men and women that love listening to us that are driving right now. Safe driving and all the rest, but big kudos. It was a fantastic event, another successful Wolseley Classic.
There are people who think you give me kidney shots every day. Like just up against the wall. Brandon's holding me, and there's just like three a day. It took some heat for the Dano comments earlier this week, too. We'll talk a bit about that and everything else coming up. You know, I was wondering about that because I literally had a nap yesterday for the first time in a long time. And then while the heavens opened up, it might have been because I got my hair cut. So time might have stopped and the angels wanted to watch.
Yeah, what's with the hat, though, today, then, if you got a haircut?
Let it.
Okay.
You got to hold it.
Man of mystery.
Brandon will understand this.
I get it. Yeah.
You get it done.
It's a hair thing.
You don't show it off right away. You got to hold it 24 hour. Then you let it breathe a bit, and then
it's like a movie trailer for like a big Scorsese piece upcoming. Like you don't give away. You don't give away the climax right away. You just.
Whoa.
Well, is that's the correct term?
Okay, fair. Yeah.
Anyways, that's probably why. But I went pouring when I left here. Absolutely pouring. Had a little nap, woke up, and I actually put on a coat and jeans to go get the lid taken care of. And I walked outside. I'm like, where am I?
Yeah,
like,
crazy,
it's just
yeah?
Crazy weather. Crazy weather. We'll see what the weather's like at Erin Hills in Wisconsin, too. That's where the 117th U.S. Open gets underway. We're going to talk about the big fight right away, but just and we're going to get into the passing of Don Matthews and what he meant to the Canadian Football League later in the show, too. But I did want to get your initial reaction to the news of the late, great Don Matthews gone at 77.
Yeah, well, terribly sad, no question about that. And truly an iconic figure. in football and in the CFL for sure. Like he was, there was a time there, the Don, that he was about as close as you got to Darth Vader, especially for us with the Bombers, right? When he was the head coach with Baltimore in that short-lived little stint where they just had a wicked, vicious team. And then, of course, the time in Montreal and all the other stops that he made, he was always a force to be reckoned with. And for me personally, of all the players, all the coaches, anything I'd ever done related to sport, no one has talked at me more than Don Matthews. He used to come out to when we were warming up, and Bobby would see him coming and would smile as we were warming up, kicking field goals and stuff. And this was back in the day when I was hitting a lot more than I was missing. And he would be beaking away at me and just saying things like, hey, we're sending two guys after you off kickoffs and all the rest of it. And like talking to me about field goals, like he was in my grill. And it was a fun back and forth. I just did a lot of listening when he was doing it. And it was true. Like I'd kick off in Baltimore, kick the ball off, and there'd be some dude coming at me from the far over offside, like, and just like making contact with me, trying to get me off my game and that sort of thing. So he was a lot of fun, and he was a man out there always playing chess, where a lot of cats are playing checkers. He's just you know, up there with the upper echelon, no question. Like on a Mount Rushmore of the CFL for coaches, he's going to be up there. So he was something. And what a fantastic number of contributions he made.
10 Grey Cup titles. He was with the Eskimos as an assistant and then a coordinator for the 5 in a row from 78 till the early 80s, and then became a head coach and won in Baltimore, won in Montreal. And that's the character of Don Matthews is something for a head coach. Like the dating of his players' ex-girlfriends and just the bravado and the everything around it. That
he
just
played hard and lived hard, right? Like, and the fast cars, motorcycles, you're touching on the ladies and all that. He lived his life to the fullest in whatever that was in his mind and stuff. And he gave her pretty much.
But all that, like you said, a bit of an innovator, 231 wins. So we'll delve into this. Milt Stegall is going to join us at 8 a.m. as well. But it is official, gentlemen. Floyd Money Mayweather will come out of retirement and will take on Conor McGregor in a boxing match August 26. We've heard about this. It's official now. And these two gentlemen will, what they're saying, the fight of all fights. They're expected to be the biggest pay-per-view draw ever in the history. It is a boxing match. Floyd Mayweather is coming out of retirement, and of course, Conor McGregor is going into the ring to box, and it already started with Conor McGregor tweeting out yesterday at 4:24 p.m., the fight is on, himself and a picture of Floyd Mayweather's father, who looks just like Mayweather, except add 50, 40 years, to say that he's an old man. It's on. I'm a little surprised. I fully understood this could happen, but now that it's official, I can't believe it's happening.
I believe it's happening. I thought it was going to happen for over a year, and there's plenty of people really finally like in tune and a part of boxing and the MMA that never thought it would happen. But when there's that much money at stake, that was ultimately the trump card here for me, is when you got that much bread and so few opportunities to cash in these days in the sport of boxing, that I thought it would happen. And this, I am really intrigued by nobody giving Conor McGregor a chance. What, like almost laughing at him. And like Vegas, the odds are like incredible that he's a massive underdog. And I understand the reasons why he's an underdog. But I think this is going to be I think this is going to be, especially early on in the fight, like I don't see a way that it goes 12 rounds. I don't know that Conor McGregor's, he's never experienced that. And if you watch Nick Diaz fights, anytime he's been pushed, he doesn't wear well as fights go on. And if it goes, the deeper in the match it goes, then it really becomes a boxing match. And he doesn't have a chance in a boxing match. But he is a fighter, and there is a distinction between fighting and boxing, even within the realm of boxing. And there's no doubt that Floyd Mayweather will rip his ass off boxing. He just there's it's a dollar versus a dime in boxing. But in the first two or three rounds, I wonder if Conor McGregor's mentality is going to – he'll under his camp will know that. And you come out and be uber aggressive. People talking about the Pacquiao fight and how disappointing this was. This will be nothing like the Pacquiao fight. Conor McGregor is going to be wildly aggressive. There's a lawsuit that if he kicks Mayweather that he gets sued. But you know what, guy? I wouldn't be surprised at all to see a Superman punch throw it into – that's. I don't think that's an illegal move in boxing. I wouldn't be surprised to see that. As I just think – and we all know that McGregor can – there's going to be opportunities for contact for Conor McGregor. The question's going to be, can he land one? And I think if he does land one, even if it doesn't send Mayweather to the ground – if he lands one, it'll shatter the notion within that realm and the universe that goes on inside that boxing ring that Mayweather will know he can tag him, and then McGregor knows that he can tag him, and then Mayweather will know that he can be hit. And you just kind of wonder after that if something develops in the short period of time there that maybe opens the door for Conor McGregor to possibly knock down a guy who hasn't knocked out a fighter. Mayweather hasn't knocked out a fighter since 2011. So that's seven fights. He hasn't knocked anybody out, and he's 40 years old. Like all of us who are 40 or more knows that there's some point in time when you start to lose it, right? And it's right around the door of 40. It can be 38, 42, but it happens to all of us, men and women who are athletes, where you just lose that sharpness. And I would suspect that Mayweather is somewhere around there. So, and in comparison to his 28-year-old peak of his prime, like right at the prime of his physicalities, I'm really excited about this. I can't wait for it to happen, and we will never again, I don't think, boys, be in a situation where there is going to be so much pomp and excitement and chatter and yapping leading up to August 26th. It's going to be a glorious journey from today to August 26th.
Floyd Mayweather comes in as an early 10-1 favorite. He's 40. Conor McGregor is 28. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I'm not as excited for this as other people are. I just kind of feel like there's a lot of gimmick to this fight, and with how much money these two are going to be making, and it's going to be astronomical.
$75 million for McGregor, $100 million for Mayweather.
Yeah, and the pay-per-view views are going to be shattered. I expect all the records in boxing and fighting and whatever to be just obliterated by this fight. But I don't know. Like I'm not really expecting a whole lot from this. And maybe it was Mayweather-Pacquiao being a total letdown.
Yeah.
But I do understand that McGregor will not be as cautious. Like there will be no
different.
There will be absolutely no hesitancy in McGregor's approach to this fight. But I don't know. Like people have been trying to knock out Floyd Mayweather for years, and no one. It's not even like he's shown any chinks in the armor. Like no one's even really been close to it. And I just can't help but feel like, when you take professional boxers up against a guy that nobody could touch, you're going to take a UFC guy who has boxing in his background, but it's not his strength. Like I don't even know if it's going to be that entertaining of a fight. I'm just not expecting a whole lot from this. For me, I'm not buying a pay-per-view of the fight. If you want to put the press conferences up on pay-per-view, I'll shell out 50 bones for that. Like that's what I'll be watching for the entertainment of those two. Just put a microphone in front of the both of them, make it an hour long show. I'm cool with that. I'm not going to spend any money on the fight whatsoever, but I'll drop down a couple dinero on the, I'm assuming, two or three press conferences these two will have.
Well, I'm very intrigued by this. I will be watching it. I am a fan of boxing, always have been since a kid. The sweet science. I just don't know how this is going to go. I don't know if I'm not excited for it as a boxing match at all. I'm excited for it as a spectacle. And even in Floyd Mayweather's last fight, I still can't believe how fast he is, both with his feet and his punches. He's super quick, so hard to hit. But McGregor is McGregor, so I don't know. I guess, how do you win this? We got to take a break. We'll talk about this when we come back. This is the Big Show. With the big fight on August 26th. More McGregor-Mayweather talk on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN1290 and Alter Ego Sports want to help you make this summer off the chain. Visit TSN1290.ca and enter to win a 2017 Cannondale Quick 8 bike valued at over $500. We'll be giving away a new bike daily during Bike Week, June 19th to the 23rd. For more details and to enter now, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. 22 minutes past the opening hour here on the Big Show on a Thursday, and we are back to talking about this Mayweather-McGregor fight boxing match, August 26th. So who do you have winning this just from the offset right now, before we delve into it for the months of this summer prior to the fight? And how is it won? Like, how is it? Does it go the length? Does it go the distance? Is it a one punch? Is it a scoring?
If it goes the distance, it's impossible for McGregor to win. It's impossible. There's just, because that's a boxing match, man. You're talking 12 rounds of strategy, technical things. Like, you got to be a tactician in there. And that is sort of, at this point in time in his career, that's what Floyd Mayweather's all about. You look at his last seven fights have all gone the distance, and he's won them all against some of the upper echelon guys out there. There's no chance in hell, absolutely zero, that Conor McGregor can stand with him for 12 rounds. I don't even think physically that he can last that long without getting knocked out. So there's just zero chance that it goes the distance. I hate, and I use the word as forcefully as it sounds, I absolutely hate Floyd Mayweather. I would love to see. I wouldn't bet a cent on it, but I certainly would love to see McGregor knock Floyd Mayweather's ass out. I would love it. It would probably send me screaming and standing up, enjoying it. But I think the first two, like the first three rounds, I think are going to be ferocious, where basically you see McGregor more or less chasing Mayweather around the ring. And I think Mayweather, if he just survives those three rounds, and that's the time frame, that's the window McGregor has to win the fight. And it might only be two rounds. He's going to punch himself out in a hurry. The big question is, can he land something? And if he does, if he can cause Mayweather to stumble, stagger, or pray to heaven, catch him on the jaw and send him down to the ground, then look out. Then you got one heck of a story here. But once it gets past that, and then Mayweather can settle in and do his business as he does where he, you know, all the actual boxing comes into play, that's when McGregor will get buried. So I just don't see it going the distance. Expect Conor McGregor to be uber aggressive right out of the gate, something Manny Pacquiao never was. Fighters or boxers never really would be there, right? But I think, like, McGregor's going to open himself up. He could get caught maybe by Mayweather in the early stages, but also there's going to be two or three chances, I think, for McGregor to catch Mayweather in those first three rounds.
I would agree with that. That basically, if it's not over after round three, you might as well turn the TV off. Unless you'd like to see, you know, one tired guy stand up in the ring trying to hit a water bug. Like, that's what's going to happen. So I kind of think it'll be like to put it in a, I guess, a boxing comparison, it would be like if Mike Tyson fought Muhammad Ali. Tyson might catch Ali early on, but if it goes past that, there's no way you're touching the greatest. And that's just kind of how I see the fight going. Like, maybe that's why I'm not super excited about this, is that I don't think Mayweather has been dodging punches and has been a boxing mastermind in the ring for years and years, and he's made some of the legends, maybe not legends, that's a bit much, but some of the best in the game at the time look incompetent and look pathetic. And now you're going to get this brash Irish idiot coming in, and he's going to find a way to break down the defense of the greatest defensive fighter of all time. I don't think I really see that happening.
But the one thing to counter that a little bit, to throw a jab at that, is 4-0, right? Mayweather's memories of his brilliance is sometime in the past, and he's 40 years old, man. You can't be brilliant from a physical standpoint forever. At some point in time, it starts to wither away. And I can't help but wonder if 28 versus 40, like that gives McGregor an opportunity, yep. right?
The only thing I would say, too, though, is that for all of McGregor, for all of Mayweather's fault as a human, he is a very smart businessman. And he has everything to lose in this fight, whereas McGregor loses, so everyone's like, yeah, you were supposed to lose. You're fighting a boxer.
Cashes in, yeah.
So I just kind of wonder if Mayweather is almost crazy like a fox here, where he's playing us all for idiots, and he's going to take home another $100 million plus payday.
Well, I mean, I always said, what would it take Floyd Mayweather? And people go, 50 mil. So, no, it wouldn't. Well, now we know, $100 million. Like a $100 million payday. Plus, how many sponsors is he going to get leading into this? And like, this is just epic. I don't see McGregor getting a punch in on Floyd Mayweather. I know he's 40, and maybe I'll change my mind by the time this thing rolls around, but he is so fast. Even on older, slower Mayweather can avoid contact for 3 to 4 rounds.
Because you know dang well early on, it's McGregor who'll be walking forward, right? And if McGregor can get him in a corner where he can't keep moving, dancing, that's going to be a huge part of it.
Most, except for Nate Diaz, boxers, Sugar Ray Leonard, Mike Tyson, UFC fighters who have weighed in on this have all gone with Mayweather, except for Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz said what you just said. I think Conor can win if it's in the next the first 2 to 3 rounds. Everybody else, Joe Rogan, all the UFC fighters, all the boxers say this is Mayweather's fight. He's going to win. We'll take a break, talk more about this, but specifically more next about the Bombers preseason game with the Eskimos on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie. We have $10,000 in cash prizes towards select selfie takers across our fine province, and you could be one of the recipients to enter. Take a really good selfie at some point this summer. Post it before Thursday, August 31st to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. Show us an amazing photo or take a theme selfie in one of these 5 categories. Selfie of the Summer, presented by Robertson College, is worth $5,000. Best Animal Selfie is presented by Assiniboia Park Zoo. That's worth $1,000. As is the Best Food and Drink Selfie, presented by Booster Juice. Best Hair Selfie, presented by Aura Hair Group. Best Outdoor Selfie, presented by Lacoste Garden Center. And Best Smile Selfie, presented by Toddlers to Teens. For more information, visit tsn1290.ca. Our favorite picks in each of the below categories will be selected and revealed Tuesday, September 5th. Keep your phone charged and be ready to capture the best that summer 2017 has to offer. The Big Show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. 34 minutes past the hour. This from CTV News this morning. Would-be bride can keep the diamond ring after a breakup, a Nova Scotia court rules. What do you guys rule on that?
That's tasteless, I'm going to dare say. At best, tasteless when that happens.
I need to know more. Who's at fault for the breakup?
That's a fair question.
Oh.
I'll give you that. That's a fair question.
Let's not jump on either of these. Yeah. Poor folks just yet who lost the greatest love of all.
That is a fair question.
Very,
I'll give you that.
Very, very well done, Brandon. A woman who broke up with her fiancé after a fight over wedding expenses can keep the engagement ring, a Halifax adjudicator has ruled.
Yeah, now that's crap.
Sued as would-be bride. Devin Sherrington has sued his would-be bride Lauren Arbuckle in small claims court for the 3.25 carat diamond ring worth as much as $19,000.
Wow.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
What the heck? Whoa.
So they broke up. She broke up with him over finances for the wedding. And he took her to court to get the ring back. Court said she can keep it.
Just imagine how luxurious this stupid celebration of a wedding was going to be when you're talking about a $19,000 3-point-whatever carat ring. So this one is clear and obvious. No, tasteless at best.
Brandon?
Yeah.
Might be the best thing to ever happen to this fella. Go take the risk.
That is the final sentencing from that should have been how the judge ended
That's
this.
Right.
Like, look, listen, buddy,
this
you're losing the ring. But I'm saving you a lot more, buddy.
The best $19,000 you've ever spent, fella.
Look at this as an investment into your future, is what the judge maybe said. I don't know. We should move on quickly.
We're gonna get in trouble.
Yeah. Quickly.
Why are the phones lighting up?
Boss Pete's fan line, 9 a.m. The big show on TSN 1290, Bombers and Eskimos. Bombers final and Eskimos for that same reason. Final preseason game of this preseason. The Bombers will then have 2 weeks off. Head coach Mike O'Shea was asked yesterday how much he expects the starters to play tonight, given the fact that they have a week one bye.
My preference is to go around to a few of the guys and ask them how they are feeling and whether they think they've, not that they're done, but have they had enough work together where they feel good about what they're doing out there? You know, that's to me is more important than a pitch count or anything like that. The time off, it's that may not enter into it, right? It depends on how the game flows, really.
Head coach Mike O'Shea, and very windy yesterday out at training camp. What do you expect to see and how much do you expect the starters to play, given the fact that they do have a week one bye? Like, it's going to be a long time before these guys have any game action again.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is it's your second exhibition game, and you've got to take a gander at a number of other guys on the roster. So I'll be really surprised to see Matt Nichols in for anything more than a half, because I think you want to take a good look at Lefevre. Give Lefevre a quarter. Give Dominique Davis a quarter as well, is kind of what I loosely think it'll play out as. And then you're looking at a number of other positions that are probably still up in air that you want to take a look. So I think you have to ignore the fact that you have a bye week upcoming when you're talking about how much time guys are going to have to play out there, and just sort of stick to the script as to what you would do if it was normal, because you've got to get the information on these guys and then move forward with the week vacay or whatever the heck is coming up for these fellas after tonight.
Now, in a normal situation, if the Bombers were to play next week like they normally would, how much would Nichols usually go into the third quarter in that scenario?
No, I think you still a half. I think either way, you're probably still looking at about a half for him, because you got two other guys that they're still probably. I don't know if they've settled in for sure to who's second and third string, right?
Doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, and the game tonight, although I tend to lean that they probably have already, but the game tonight will go a long way in solidifying that.
So, yeah, then I think I'd be okay with Nichols getting a half, and then you give the other two guys a quarter each. I think that would be, a quarterback-wise, a fair assessment, because as much as you want to find out two and three, you need to make sure Nichols and that first offense feel good about where their game's at. Like, that's priority one. And if they're not playing well after the first half, then I have absolutely no problem with Nichols starting the second half and trying to get some rhythm at that point, because that's your primary goal here. Like, finding out who your backup is fine and dandy, but hopefully your backup doesn't play at all this season, right? And you need to make sure, I think, with that break coming up, that the number one offense kind of will head into that game with some solid momentum and hopefully some strong play.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you treat it the same as any other preseason game. You brought up a good point about the bye week. Like, that's usually when guys go back home. That's usually when guys take a bit of a vacation. Like, what do you do as a player coming out of camp?
I mean,
they announce the roster, you make the team. Do you actually go home for a couple days and come back?
I would suspect so. Right, the guys have been here. Most arrived before training camp to get just to work on a little bit of things. So some of the guys have been here for a number of weeks already, and knowing dang well they've only got X number of days during the regular season where they can get away, where you get maybe 3-4 days off. Like, I don't know. I wonder how many days off even the team's given them. I suspect 3 or 4 for sure, because, you know, I would be a little bit tempted, although it'd be the players wouldn't like it very much. I'd be a little bit tempted to keep it a regular type of approach, like upcoming here, have 3 practices. So maybe like today being Thursday, give them Friday off, or maybe like a rundown film on Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday, Monday, maybe Tuesday off, sort of thing, as if those were, or sorry, practice those days. So give them, sorry, my apologies, have today's Thursday, give them Friday off, then practice Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then give them a couple days or 3 days off as if they were going to travel somewhere for a game and then bring them back just to get the routine of it down.
So use the bye week as the last week of training camp and then use that bye week itself as your backup practice. Like on the schedule, in the CFL schedule, week one will start. That's their bye week. But don't keep practicing. Give them, because you got to pick the team yet, too, by Saturday. So you have your team roster. Do you bump up the bye week of week one CFL and then let them go then and then come back? That's what I would do. I would bring them back so that that first week of the season, even though that's the bye week, you're back at it.
Yeah, I think it depends on your stature in the team. If you're a no-doubt starter, I'm okay with going home. If I'm one of those bubble guys that just snuck in, no way in hell I'm leaving Winnipeg. Like, I'm making the call home. Sorry. I'm not risking anything. I put extra work at the facility with the coaching staff in the weight room, like whatever it is that I can get noticed, maybe a little bit extra, because like, yeah, you made the team great, but it's not like your spot on the team is cemented in stone for the whole season. So I think it kind of, if I'm a bubble guy, I'm not looking at this as a bye week necessarily. I'm looking at this as just kind of another normal work week. And hey, if you're Matt Nichols and you want to go home, that's fine and dandy. But if I'm one of the guys that snuck in, one of the Americans especially.
I don't know how, like, I don't think that would do anything to help you keep your job, though. Because if you snuck in and you've made the team, you've made the team. You know, like, there's nothing you can't really kiss butt or impress anybody in the weight room or anything like that. But there's just so much time here, guys. Like, they play tonight, and then you don't play until July 1st is the next game. So there's all kinds of time here. I would be really surprised if they don't get a big chunk here. But like as I said, I would give them the 16th off probably, and then practice on the 17, 18, 19, maybe even the 20, and then give them like 21 to 24 off sort of thing. And then you get probably start practice on the 26th for the game on the 1st sort of thing. So I think that they're going to end up getting 3-4 days off for sure. And there you would see a mass exodus of guys going home.
Interesting stuff. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290, 43 minutes past the opening hour. Bombers and Eskimos tonight at IGF, 7:30. Our Blue Bomber, Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day begins at 5:30. Head coach, do you want to go?
I just want to, just quick on the Don Matthews thing, just to touch on it. Yeah. I remember in reading about him and all the rest of it, the famous quote, like the quote that defines Don Matthews that will live in forever. Are you aware of the one I'm talking about?
I think so.
Yeah, this isn't a democracy, this is a dictatorship, and I'm the head dick. Like that that was the line. That was his forever quote to be remembered, and players talked about that constantly.
Gary Lawless worked for the Argos when they won a Grey Cup back in the Doug Flutie was there and stuff, and he said that Don Matthews refused to call the preseason exhibition games and said that word will not exist. There's no exhibition games. There's no fake games. Uh-huh. It's a preseason game, and that's it. You take it just as serious in the preseason as you do the regular season.
And there was one cat. When we talk about what is the Craig Button's dispassionate loyalty or assessment? What
loyalty? Yeah,
dispassionate. Like there's a guy. There were no feelings, man. There was no one, I don't think, around Don Matthews. If the second you started to tail off or not get your job done at the level, except bam, just gone. It was cold. The players talked about that, and then also there wasn't always the warmest of feelings and relationship that existed with him and media members, right? He was testy at best with media, and same with office staff. Wherever he worked, like, he was pretty hard on everyone around him in the environment and stuff. But he was, when you're that successful as he was, and you call in your own shots and you're creating your own universe, he was sort of a classic example of the head football coach. And Jim, I don't know if he was ever had both titles, but that was his universe. Like, he was God in that universe.
He reminds me of, was he the Bill Parcells of the CFL? Every time I watched Don Matthews, whether it was a sideline with reporters, like, he just screamed Bill Parcells.
I just think they're too different off the field to compare him to Bill Parcells.
Don was so arrogant so pompous and arrogant. But yet, in his circle, very kind, very... You know, other than the staff and all that, but like if it came to, you know, it just so arrogant and brash, especially with the media.
Yeah, really. Like, he was tough to deal with and work with for a lot of people, but wickedly successful.
Mike O'Shea played for Don Matthews in those years in Toronto as well. And Mike O'Shea also told the media yesterday what he is looking for in tonight's final preseason game.
Well, winning their battles, individual battles, play in and play out. that consistent effort and consistent consistency in terms of executing at a high level and winning on a play-by-play basis is that'll set guys apart, right? Yeah, they've got to show awesome effort. They got to show us they love to play the game.
That's good. Hey, man, you are out there, and this is that part of preseason or exhibition games that I always find so intriguing, where it can look real sloppy, and it's not always a lot of fun to watch because of the lack of execution level. But these guys are literally battling for their way of life, their incomes going forward here. It's super intense situations like this. Like, this is your last opportunity. We talked about, like, there are going to be some guys tonight that literally get four plays out in the field. And if you don't make an impact in those four plays, you're doing something else for a living next week.
That's it, eh? Like four plays
yeah.
for some
like
guys.
It's amazing how it's just remarkable the few opportunities you get, man, to shine. If you don't shine, and heaven forbid if you make a mistake, then you're dead, right? So it's just you need to be so acutely tuned in for these guys trying to break into the roster or someone on the bubble trying to keep their job.
Cutdown day is Saturday, 10 p.m., I believe, is the deadline to have your final roster in for the CFL season. Bombers, Eskimos tonight. Manuk Dencher, Blue Bomber game day here on TSN 1290 gets underway at 5:30 with 2 hours of pregame coverage. We're going to line up some of the expansion news that came out with the National Hockey League at the top of the hour. But up next, we'll get into more about Don Matthews and the Toronto Blue Jays. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Leave the back gate unlocked because TSN's coming over on select evenings throughout the summer. TSN 1290 will back up the truck with a portable party for up to 25 people, including catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl, hot bar with tortillas so you can make tacos, and an abundance of three cheese queso. Beverages including a sampling of Tall Grass Vodka, Winnipeg's only grain-to-bottle vodka produced by Capital K Distillery. Family pack of fireworks to light up your night, courtesy of Archangel Fireworks, and iGrill 2 digital app connected thermometer for each grand prize winner provided by Lux Barbecue Company, and a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of the week provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. We'll have the TSN crew on site to help serve and set up as well. Parties will happen Thursday evenings from now until August, including June 29th, July 20th, and August 10th. Enter online at tsn1290.ca, and we could be seeing you very soon. The Big Show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon, 53 minutes to the top of the hour. We'll break down all the expansion news in the National Hockey League and everything else that happened in the National Hockey League yesterday afternoon, and then get into some Jets talk as well in the next hour on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Bob Weeks is also going to join us live from Erin Hills in Wisconsin as the U.S. Open, 117th U.S. Open, is officially underway. The Jays were down, then they came back, then they were down, and then Russell Martin hit a bomb in the eighth inning to beat Tampa Bay, whom the Jays have an enormously hard time to beat. 7-6 last night. They now have a day off and then host a weekend series in the big smoke of Toronto. Where am I? Oh, the White Sox. The White Sox come to town, and then they head out on the road to take on the Rangers and the Royals. Still trying to climb back to 500 within a game once again, the Blue Jays.
Yeah, they're always doing that tease, all right? Liriano goes pretty deep, 7 last night. Osuna finishes it up at the end just to tease the Blue Jays fans again with sniffing at Mount 500. And you wonder if finally they can climb the hill here, get to the top, and get to that perch. Now 7 games back from the Yankees. And completely in the mix for a wild card spot. There's a whole jumble of teams here. They're a game and a half back now. There are 6 teams within 2 games of that wild card spot. So there's a whole lot of, with all the disappointment that the Blue Jays have brought to the table early on this season, completely within striking distance of a wild card spot.
Yeah, well, really fortunate. That's just kind of the main thing, right? Because if other teams, I mean, the Rangers, for example, were a team that you thought would have been way higher up, a couple teams in the Central, and that basically saved the Blue Jays' season because they could very realistically be already 5 or 6 games out of it. And then, I mean, yeah, you're kind of in it, but you're basically not, even with the amount of games left. So they can thank a lot of other teams kind of crapping the bed early on to keep their wild card hopes extremely realistic.
They have to beat the White Sox in this series. 28-36 in the Central. Minnesota still leading the Central with a two-game lead on Cleveland at 33-29. But with the White Sox coming to town, 28-36, they're one game the Jays are down from 500, 32-33, 7 games back of the Yankees, but only a game and a half back of the wild card. It's been what it has been to this point, but you have to start winning series, and I would think it starts against the 28-36 Chicago White Sox this weekend.
A winning series, or when you're in this situation like against the White Sox, how about sweeping one? Right, like this is go sweep one, boys. You need it.
Houston Astros are still 45-22.
Here we go.
Best record in baseball. Dodgers have 41 wins. Nobody else is touching 40. Washington's at 39, but these Stros are just woo, unbelievable. It is a Blue Bomber Manuk Denture game day. Bombers, Eskimos. And we will later on give you a pair of tickets to tonight's game. You'll have to pick them up today, obviously, during business hours. But if you'd like to go, stay tuned for that. And we'll get into the NHL news and notes and the Royal Sports Power Hour. Lots to come on everything that took place and everything that could take place coming up next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Alter Ego Sports are proud to present the TSN 1290 Street Team. Popping up at Winnipeg's best events all summer long. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity events, and much more. We'll be bringing our Spin to Win prize wheel to select events and giving you the chance to win great stuff like tickets to Bruno Mars or a Cannondale Quick 8 bicycle from Alter Ego Sports. Here's where you can find us over the next little bit. We were just at the Walk for Alzheimer's back on Tuesday. The Winnipeg Jazz Festival coming up June 15th to the 25th. We'll be all over that, or there anyway. The Walk for the ALS Saturday, June 17th. Ride Don't Hide for the Canadian Mental Health Association Sunday, June 25th. And the University of Winnipeg Westman Golf Tournament, Thursday, June 29th. For more information on these great events and the TSN 1290 Street Team, visit tsn1290.ca. And this is The Big Show, 5 minutes past the hour. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. Lots to come on the Bombers, Eskimos preseason tilt. Milt Stegall's going to join us in the next hour, as will David Pagnata. Bob Weeks at the bottom of this hour in 30 minutes from now, live from Erin Hills in Wisconsin, to tee up the 117th U.S. Open, which is now underway. NHL news and notes. And gentlemen, we'll start with some NHL news and get back into this Vegas expansion draft. Listening to all the discussions around the country, around the hockey circles, even here yesterday afternoon with Paul Edmonds and Hustler back on the air on TSN 1290's The Afternoon Ride in the afternoon. And what stood out to me yesterday a little bit, amongst a lot of little tidbits coming out, was Gerard Gallant, the new head coach of and the first head coach of the Las Vegas Golden Knights, will not have much input. It'll be very limited input on the actual selection of players. He's there to coach the team, and that's it. George McPhee, Kelly McCrimmon, the brass will do the selecting of players. And I'm wondering your thoughts on that. And I say that because this isn't, you know, Florida or Buffalo who's looking for a coach. And you sort of say, this is what we want to do. This is where we're at. This is where we're going. This is sort of a who's available. Vegas could have a certain philosophy. I'm sure they're all on the same page by now. But they could also be sitting there going, well, these are the only ones available, so we better go this route or that route. Is it better for Gerard as a head coach to sort of just wait for the team to be picked? Or should a head coach in an expansion team be in on the selections and find out which? I would assume once selections are being made, he'll say, you know, if he has a problem or an issue with a player. But I don't even know if that would take place because given, well, we need players.
Yeah, I don't think in the hierarchy of sports, as I understand it, man, the coach, unless asked by the GM, that's not his job. Personnel is the job of the GM. I know that sometimes you get shared situations and there'll be more brainstorming sessions, and you would think any good GM or decent GM for the most part would tap into some of the knowledge, understanding, and work a little bit side by side with the head coach in making such decisions. But I certainly don't think that a GM needs to. I would think there'd be some level of communications, if not during the process, before, just so you know, just to touch base, McPhee with Gallant here, sort of to, you know, same sort of page stuff. But I believe that wouldn't have happened. That would have happened prior to him being hired, even. So to me, it doesn't surprise me whatsoever that Gallant will have a very small role, if any, whatsoever in this process.
Well, he was hired to be the coach in April, so George McPhee and his scouts have been spending how much time scouring every single team, every single night, every single game in every building. So, like, I completely understand basically kind of shooing Gerard Gallant outside of the door when it comes to this, because McPhee and his team of scouts, have done all the research. They're the ones that have been doing everything. So, like, you might ask Gallant maybe about a player or two from Florida or an opinion from here or there about a guy maybe he's comfortable with and enjoys his playing style and it could mesh well with what he does. But for the most part, if I'm George McPhee, I got my team. My team has done all the work we need, and that's who, like, my circle of trust here is the contingent that I'm going with here to focus on who we're taking.
It's the GM's job to assemble the personnel. It's the head coach's job to make the most of the personnel assembled.
I agree with that. I'm just saying that's a different scenario where Gallant could say these are kind of, like, it didn't work out in Florida, and there was a disconnect between management and him there, and I'm just wondering if it, I mean, I'm wondering if there should be more input with this, because if there's going to be a trade made, the GM goes down to the coach and he says, what do you know about this guy? What do you like about him? You know, I don't think the coach sits there and goes, don't do it, whatever, but I think he's asked on certain things, and I'm sure on certain players Gerard Gallant will be asked, but I think on the majority of them he won't even be asked, because these are the guys that are there. Like, the lists come out and this is what's available to you. You might not like this style, but there's seven guys that play this way or can do this, and we want to sort of be more high scoring, but this is what's just available to us.
Well, I think that all would have been established prior to hire, though, right? That when Gallant takes his job, he knows what McPhee, the kind of guy that he is, the way he thinks, the type of personnel he'd like to assemble. They would both know those things already about each other. So I see no reason for a coach, unless it's like Wicks is saying, if there's some knowledge that Gallant has about a specific player, something along those lines, then I would understand the communication. But by and large, I think it's pretty clear cut. Normally, unless that conversation wants to be had by the GM to just give a little bit of insight if you have it on the players, it is up to the GM to establish the roster.
And I could see if it was like Chevy and Maurice, maybe, where you know Chevy goes down to Maurice and asks about a player he might be trying to bring in, but you don't have a whole lot of options if you're Vegas, right? Like, the player list is exposed to you. You have to take essentially what's given. So I don't, like, even if you wanted Gallant's knowledge or input or whatever, like, there's not really a whole lot he's going to be giving to you anyways, because you don't really have, like, your options are basically laid out for you. And if you're McPhee, your selections are between one or two players per team regardless anyways.
But I think that's all relative, man. For instance, the place in, just take Winnipeg into consideration. If Toby were to lift his no move deal, that you would have a pretty different choice to make in, for instance, going after Dano or Toby Enstrom. So I think because the choices are a little bit more limited than normal, it doesn't really change anything to me. So I think what we're going to see here is a classic, the relationship that exists between GMs and coaches, where this is the job of the GM.
Let's use that as an example. Should, and maybe he will, I don't know, but should Gerard Gallant sit there and go, you know what, I like Armia, or I like Dano, but I don't like the seven guys we have sitting here on our blue line. I would like a Toby Enstrom. Or is that just going to be, this is the guy you got, these are the defensemen you got? And I don't know how it's going to work. I'm just asking how you guys think it should work and what they should do.
I really wonder if they would be interested in Toby Enstrom. I really do. For the 1 year, so you got a guy for 1 year, a guy who is obviously on the decline, a guy who's completely undersized. They're going to have some pretty good, like, you look at all the mock selections that I'm seeing for the Vegas lineup. They're going to have some decent names available to them on the blue line. So I truly wonder whether or not, I agree completely with Wicks with what he was saying yesterday. It is far from a slam dunk if Toby Enstrom is there to be plucked that they're going to pluck him. They may well see more upside in a guy, if they go 7-3-1, leaving one of the D exposed, that would be like a Dano or a Kopp, and they may well see more upside with a young player like that they can have for a while.
Well, and what is Vegas's main issue going to be next season, team-wise?
Scoring.
Yeah, you look at every... I mean, hey, you can make your own expansion simulator, too. And the defense is okay. The goaltending will be pretty solid, actually. But you look at the offense, and they'll be deep in the sense of they'll have NHL talent on all four lines, but it's not a lot of impact scoring. So I just... Yeah, I just kind of wonder that if... I think I put it at 60-40 yesterday that if it was between Enstrom and Dano, who Vegas would take. But I could totally understand.
Might even be more.
You get like if you get a cost-controlled 22-year-old forward who, sure, he's bounced around a little bit, but you look at his rookie year in Columbus and he put up 22 points in 37 games. Maybe if we give that guy first-line ice time, we might unearth a bit of a gem here. So, yeah, I agree. It's not totally set in stone just yet that – regardless of who's available on defense for Vegas, that Toby is a surefire number one lock defenseman for them to pick.
Yeah, that's the interesting one. That's the I'm in the camp where I don't think he's waving, so I think they have to protect him. And I listening to Paul Edmonds talk yesterday on TSN 1290 as well. He's saying that this is all hinging. He thinks they go 7-3-1, but it's all dependent on Toby Enstrom, and they were talking about that too, and whether Toby Enstrom would actually be selected if he was available. I think he would at $6 million and 1 year left. It's not a long commitment, and you bring him in, and if you want to re-sign him, you try to. If not, you can deal him. If like the fact that it's 1 year is what I think is attractive
to
Vegas.
How is that a positive for Vegas?
Because they don't seem to want guys on 4- and 5-year deals. They want to say, from what I've read and from what I understand, they want to bring in guys at the max of, they will have longer contracts, but they want guys that are on 2-year deals at the max predominantly, and then sort of bring them in, do the wheeling and dealing you do with the extra guys or who you want to move out, move in, and then spend the next year to two looking at what they have. And specifically guys like, say, if it's Dano or Armia, the younger guys, so you do that. I think the fact that it's a 1 year, like I would think that it's a lot more attractive 1 year, $6 million than it is a 4 year, $7 million for Dion Phaneuf.
Well,
or
but
another guy.
You're talking
on
about another diminished player. Like that's just a flat out bad contract. But to me, if they can get guys that are decent that have 2, 3, 4 years, they're going to jump all over that.
Well, if they're going to draft guys like we seem to think they are, or I do anyways, Marco Dano making $850K or Joel Armia making $925K, and they're going to predominantly go with these 20 to 23-year-old and bring them in, you're going to struggle to make the floor.
Yep. So
you're going to need a couple guys on $6 million deals.
Like David Clarkson. So they're kind of doing that.
Yeah.
If you were George McPhee, would you take... And you had the choice. Let's just say you have the choice between Dano and Enstrom. Are you still taking Toby Enstrom?
Well, that depends on who's, like Troy said, who are my other... Say I'm taking 10 D-men. Who are my other six? Who are my top 6 D I have? But if I'm along this line and I want to load this team up with Joel Armia's, Marco Dano's, some defense, I'm going to take a Toby Enstrom. I'm going to look at what veteran defensemen are available, because I don't want a bunch of 20 to 22-year-old D-men unless they're Jacob Trubas, which aren't going to be there. So I take a couple veteran D-men, 2 to 3 of them minimum, that I don't care what their cost is. I want some veterans on my blue line. And then I look, I need some money on the deals here to make the floor.
I think there's a real good chance they don't take them. And I don't think the one-year contract is a positive. You bring in a guy for a year, bam, gone. That's going to be one of your picks. As opposed to, as what we're touching on, the number of years you get if you go get a guy that's 22, 23 years old, that guy's yours for X number of years going forward. And if it's a garbage guy, then you wouldn't pick him. But if they can see some upside, some positive, which I think would exist if you're talking Kopp or Dano, that you're going to have under control for a number of years going forward, as opposed to a guy who's on the decline coming in for 1 year, I don't know. I think they pass up on him. I think it's bigger than 60-40.
The only way the 1 year I think would be a benefit to Vegas is where I think it's kind of safe to assume they won't be at a playoff spot come the trade deadline, so you're able to flip Toby for a pick, whether it's a second or I don't know whatever it'll be at that point. But you're able to get because their prospect stock line right now is zero. It's non-existent. So you are able to stock that a little bit. So I could understand it from that point. But I think if I was McPhee, I would probably lean towards taking Dano over Enstrom, just to have a cost-controlled young forward who could potentially up that scoring that we haven't seen yet.
I'd say Kopp or Dano. I'd agree with that.
We'll decide which forward would go next on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
And TSN 1290 is proud to support the Canadian Mental Health Association and Ride Don't Hide, Sunday, June 25th, starting at Vimy Ridge Park. Pit stops will include the Manitoba Legislative Building and Canadian Museum for Human Rights. Funds raised will help support programs dedicated to youth mental health, workplace mental health, and family support initiatives. To learn more or to register, visit RideDon'tHide.com. 22 minutes past the hour, we'll go live to Erin Hills and the U.S. Open at the bottom of the hour. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you right now on the Big Show. And so if it is a forward that are exposed or is going to be taken by Vegas, and you're George McPhee, whom do you take? Do you take Marco Dano? Do you take Joel Armia? Do you take somebody else?
Well, I don't even think you can compare Armia and Dano. There's no question that Armia is going if that's who it is. But I'm going to assume that the Jets go 7-3-1. So it's between Kopp and Dano. And that's a real tough one.
Yeah, if it's 4-4, then you got either Lowry or Perreault sitting there as well. So I would assume you'd go Perreault.
Yeah, like I don't see a way Armia goes regardless. Like whatever format you go. Because you're going to keep, if it's 4-4, you're going to lose Lowry or Perreault because they're much more valuable than Armia. And if it's 7-3-1, you're going to keep Armia.
And there, you're going to lose Perreault there for sure. Like on one of the best contracts as far as production goes in the NHL. And on top of it all, it's important to remember that George McPhee was the guy who originally drafted Perreault. So he's going to have an inherent liking to him already, and he's done nothing to hurt his standings. And Perreault's gone if they go 4-4-1. There's no doubt about that. But okay. But I don't think that I think they go 7-3-1, and it's going to come down to Dano and Kopp. And for that situation there, sort of flip a coin as to who you think goes.
Dano and Armia are interesting. In 107 games, Dano has 42 points and 17 goals. In 101 games, Armia has 29 points and 14 goals.
Yeah, the production has been... is still sort of, I suppose, a question mark here for Joel Armia. But anyone that watches him play, you see certain things that he does with it, like his to maintain puck possession in tight spaces. Some of his dangles and all the rest of it. Some of his feeds, and defensively, he's right there. I just, which is why all of that adds up to me. I just don't see them making him available. I think it would be a massive loss, Joel Armia, to. Like, he is exactly what this team would need to acquire or wants to acquire more of in trying to find, take that next step to the playoff line. So, yeah, I have a lot of trouble believing they're going to leave him exposed. I just don't see it happening. But if it were to happen, that's great for the Golden Knights. And I don't think that Joel Armia and Marco Dano, as much as I dig Dano's game and all the rest of it, the ceiling for Joel Armia is considerably higher.
Yeah, it's just, will he ever reach it? That's the other part of it.
To me, the flaw with Joel Armia is consistency. He's a very good two-way player. Lord knows this team needs penalty killing, which I think he's going to be very good at. I see the skill that you guys see. It's just the night-in, night-out consistency of his game.
Yeah, like whether you call it consistency or finishing ability, like if they're in the same category... Like I'm okay with terming that on top of him because he gets chances. He creates chances. It's just whether it's him or the line he was on last year, just nobody could ever finish them, which is why you kind of wonder if he got a chance with other line mates, would those numbers improve, or is he just a guy that you see a lot of them in the NHL where they could create and they could score in junior or in
Don't
Europe
forget,
or whatever.
Brother, he was feeding Matthias and Lowry.
Yeah, which is what I was saying. Yeah. Like, is it the case of the line mates, or if he gets into whatever lineup he goes in, whether it's beside Perreault and someone, or whether he moves up in the tops, however you want to move it. Like, at some point, don't you have to find out kind of what you have in him a little bit? Like, is he going to be a guy that can get you 40 points, or is he somebody that's going to be a perennial bottom sixer, which is fine, but...
I think on this team, it's absolutely fine if he's in, and you say bottom six, I'm going to go to top nine. If Adam Lowry is able to take another step, or if this team is absolutely committed to Lowry being the third centerman and just improve the left side of Lowry, and if you've got Armia on the right side, Wicks, when you're talking top nine, which the Jets absolutely need to establish, I think he's fine and dandy as a top nine guy.
We'll ask you what you think on the Boston Pizza fan line coming up at 9 o'clock, but Bob Weeks from Erin Hills, Wisconsin, and the 117th U.S. Open is next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is excited to support Canada 150 at the Forks on Saturday, July the 1st, Canada Day, of course. Visitors will experience tons of family-friendly programming at five stages around the Forks, experience a powwow and Indigenous storytelling at the Odina Celebration Circle, and of course a stunning fireworks spectacle to cap things off at 11 p.m. For a complete lineup of over 50 acts and more, visit The Forks. Visit TheForks.com is what I'm trying to say. You can also check it out at TSN1290.ca. The 117th U.S. Open is underway at the Erin Hills course in Wisconsin. And to talk about it and tee it up for us and delve into it, we welcome back into the program from TSN, a senior reporter and golf analyst, Mr. Bob Weeks. Bob, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys this morning?
Good, thank you. And just official right now, I guess, to start off, as it is underway, Phil Mickelson has officially withdrawn from the U.S. Open.
Yeah, with 0% chance of rain or precipitation here, the delay that Phil needed to make his tee time and also attend his daughter's graduation in California wasn't going to work. So he notified the USGA that he was out. And Roberto Diaz, who was the first alternate, is now in. So this will be the first time since 1994 Masters that we haven't had a major, that we're having a major without Tiger or Phil.
Do you like the way this course sets up for Dustin Johnson just to basically blast away at some of the widest fairways seen and then make the most? Do you like where he's situated here as the favorite?
Yeah, very much so. You know, he leads the tour in driving distance. He also leads the tour in greens and regulation percentage. So you put those two things together, and those are going to be key factors here around this golf course. It's tipping out at about 7,700 yards. I'm not sure they're going to play it quite that long today, but, I mean, it's a big, big golf course, and you really have to be able to move it off the tee if you're going to have any hopes of competing here. And Dustin Johnson is going to hit irons into some of these greens that a lot of other players are going to be hitting woods into. So it sets up for him well. He is coming off a little bit of a life moment where he and his fiance, Paulina, had a baby on Monday night, so his prep time was cut a little bit short. But I still think he's the favorite and the odds-on favorite going in here.
Bob, tell us a little about this course. We heard Rory McIlroy's comments, and we saw it being trimmed down a bit, but the bunkers are going to be an issue in the length, 7,800 yards, just shy of 8,000. What do you like about this course, and what do you don't like about it?
Well, it's a very different golf course than they've played typically in the U.S. Open. Typically, you get a very narrow golf course with deep rough that's not that far off the fairway, slick greens and bunkers that are fairly predictable. This is exceptionally long golf course. It is a par 72. Mostly the U.S. Opens are par 70 or 71. So it's playing a little longer than I think most people are sort of understanding perhaps. But it's still a long golf course. The rough is well off the fairways, in some cases as much as 80 yards. So big wide fairways. And I think the bunkers are really going to come into play. I think you're going to see they're very unusual shapes, which means that you're going to have very awkward stances. And in some cases, kind of like a British Open, where you may have to actually kind of hit out backwards or not towards the pin anyway. And I think it's going to be a real interesting test. And because this is the first U.S. Open here, nobody really knows, I think, the proper game plan or the perfect game plan to try and attack it. So I think you're going to see some different techniques, some different styles, some different strategies. And that's going to be revealing, I think, especially in the first round as we get underway here, basically under perfect conditions, very little wind, sun, temperatures up in the mid-30s later in the day.
Bob, I've seen that you feel the bunkers will be the bigger challenge than the fescue that Kevin Na showed us and that the USGA has decided to trim. I guess a couple of things. Please just sort of expand on why you think the bunkers will be that much more punitive than the fescue. And do you believe the USGA when they say that the Na video had nothing to do with them trimming it?
Let's deal with that second part first. I think they're a little sensitive, and I think after the mistakes they've had, they had a debacle 2 years ago at Chambers Bay with the condition of the golf course. Last year, of course, they had that big rules fiasco. And I think perhaps they're being a little sensitive, and maybe there was a plan to cut this down, but certainly the United States Golf Association wants kind of a mistake-free U.S. Open this time around. They don't want to have any big blotches of something that has nothing to do with the actual players in the golf course. So I think maybe they're cutting it down was pre-planned, but I think it's also good for them to try and fend off some possible ramifications from some guy hitting it in there. The bunkers are just so, the sand that's in the bunkers is very gritty. It's not the type of silica sand that you get at most PGA Tour events. And so for that reason, it's tough to spin the ball. So you're going to see players who will have a tough time actually getting the ball close out of the bunkers like we normally are used to seeing week in and week out on the PGA Tour. And because of that, and because of the way when you see these bunkers, if you watch it on TSN today, they have all these little fingers and little tucked areas and stuff. So it's a very awkward situation for bunkers. You're going to see some guys with one leg way up over the other and in crazy stances trying to get a swing on these balls. And I think by the end of the week, you'll find that these are probably more in play than the other ones. I still think the rough will come into play. I still think we'll see a lost golf ball. I still think we'll see guys hacking it out of the rough, but the bunkers may be more punitive.
Bob Weeks from TSN joining us live from Erin Hills in Wisconsin as the 117th U.S. Open is underway on The Big Show this morning. TSN 1290, 38 minutes past the hour. This segment is brought to you by Olympic Homes. What are the chances a Canadian could do well at this course, given its parameters?
Well, we've got two in the field, and Corey Connors is a young guy who's playing on the Web.com Tour, has been a very solid golfer for most of his career. But he's still learning. This is only his second major. He played in the Masters 2 years ago after finishing runner-up in the U.S. Amateur. He'll surprise a few people. I hope he makes the cut. I think he will. He's got a lot of game, and he's very, very smart. So that'll work in his favor on this golf course. I'm a little more positive about Adam Hadwin. You know, he is playing in his third U.S. Open. The first two, he wasn't really much of a accomplished golfer yet. But he's had a great year this year. He's obviously shot that 59. He won a tournament, and he's coming in here with more, sort of higher goals, I think, than just making the cut. I think he wants to get into contention. His big plus is that he is one of the best putters in the game when he's rolling it well. And these greens are perfect. They have not had any play on the greens. They shut the golf course down at the end of last year and have had it closed up until this point. So no one's played on these greens all year, so they're smooth. So you're going to see a lot of putts made, and I think that works in Adam's favor. He's not the longest hitter out there, but I think he'll manage to get it around here. And if that putter works for him, look for him to be around Sunday.
Bob, I'm going to call them the Rat Pack, the Johnson, Spieth, Day, McIlroy, Fowler, anyone else you can include in that, sort of that young group that was forecasted to take over the golf world and give us some wild entertainments on Sundays. It's never really transpired to the level or degree I think many had hoped. Do you foresee that possibly unfolding on Sunday?
Well, certainly those guys are the favorites if you went to the bet shop today. You know, the U.S. Open has a habit of allowing a few unusual players in. But you go back and you look and you see Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson were in the hunt 2 years ago right down the stretch at Chambers Bay. We're still waiting for Ricky to kind of break through at a major championship. Rory McIlroy is coming in here really having not played much golf this year owing to injury, and he actually has not been hitting balls on the range. He's been doing a lot of putting, a lot of chipping, and he's playing on the golf course, and he says the reason he's not hitting balls is because that'll aggravate the injury he has, which is a rib injury, which he got actually from just hitting too many shots. And Jason Day is the same sort of situation. He took a lot of time off and had a lot of stress with his mother having cancer and battling there. So he's just kind of rounding into form. So it's kind of a tough situation to get all those guys playing really well all at the same time on a golf course that they all like. But we can keep hoping. We'll keep hoping that we'll get a big battle down the stretch between two, three, four, or maybe all of them, because that certainly would be what the USGA wants, and it certainly would be what the fans want.
What's a dark horse that might rise to the forefront here, Bob?
I'll give you a couple names. Kevin Kisner is a good player who is really making his mark. He's ranked 20th in the world right now, and he is a very solid player, has a very good game for this kind of a golf course. I mean, he's unheralded, but he's going to be on the President's Cup team for the U.S. In the fall, so he's a very solid player. And the other guy who doesn't get much attention, even though he's in the top 10 in the world, is a Swedish golfer by the name of Alex Noren. And watch out for him. He has won 5 times in the last 12 months. A little bit, mostly on the European tour, but I think this guy has a lot of game, and I think he might surprise a few people out here. So those are two guys who I don't think will get a lot of attention in leading up to it, but should be watched as you go through and turn on the television this morning or later today.
Bob, it's not unusual in U.S. Opens to see maybe just a handful of golfers with red numbers at the end of Sunday. How do you think the golfers feast on Aaron Hills, or does Aaron Hills bite them back?
I think today you'll see some low scores because there's basically no wind, and the course is, well, I won't say it's defenseless because they're setting up the pins in a pretty good areas. But I suspect by Sunday there may be 4, 5, or 6 guys. But I think a winning score, probably around 4, maybe 5 under par will do. It'll depend on the weather. We've got some rain in the forecast for Friday, some strong storms in the forecast for Saturday. Sunday looks good. So if the weather cooperates, yeah, maybe 4 or 5 under, but there won't be more than 10 golfers who are in red figures or even at par.
I'm surprised the greens haven't been played on in over a year. That is an amazing story to me and a part of this course. Does that lend itself to good putters like Jordan Spieth, or does that make it more difficult?
No, it certainly does. When you got pure greens and they're not bumpy, not having little imperfections on them, then sure, the good putters are going to rise. You still have to get there to the greens. So there's some long holes out here. Like the 18th hole is 637 yards. I asked Adam Hadwin what he was going to hit in there. He said, driver, and hope. But actually, literally, in a practice round, he hit driver, 6-iron, 6-iron. So that tells you how long this golf course is playing. But having said that, and getting on the greens is also another thing, because the greens look big, but they kind of roll off and fall off on the sides. So the effective playing area is a lot smaller. So getting to the greens is the first step. Getting on the greens is the second step, and then you can use your putter. So it's not quite as perfect as it might seem, but certainly the folks who own Aaron Hills wanted to have great conditions, so they basically didn't open the golf course. It's a public golf course, and they just said, you know what, we're not going to open it until after the U.S. Open. So I guess they have deep pockets. They can do that.
Yeah, that lends itself and helps out. That's a great quote from Hadwin as well. Bob, we really appreciate your time. We're going to be glued to it. It's going to be very exciting. We'll watch for you on TSN as well. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy the U.S. Open.
Okay, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks so much, Bob.
At Bob Weeks, TSN, on Twitter, if you'd like to follow him. That's such a great quote, Adam Hadwin, on the 637-yard 18th hole at Aaron Hills. Driver, hope is how I'm going to play it.
That's a real neat story about the greens, like to close, have the course close like that. And it looks really beautiful. Isn't it something that the fairway's so wide, and Rory's saying, hey, if you end up in the fescue, you deserve it. Like, for the fairways to be that wide, and for him predicting there's only going to be 4 or 5 golfers under par, those conditions of whatever they are that are going to lead to such a small number with red numbers, it's hard to understand in a lot of ways, huh?
Yeah. Well, it is.
Just it's that vicious of greens, well, that vicious of bunkers.
Public course being closed for a year. Like, they have to have deep pockets.
What would it have been like if the fescue was, like, the scores, right? Like, if they didn't mow it down on, and it was only 4 of the holes, right? But you're talking about you get in there, you'll be very fortunate to leave with a bogey. So, I'll be absolutely fascinated that I think, you know, Bob brought up the bunkers, but I think the greens are going to be the biggest challenge that these golfers have to face. Similar to what we saw in Chambers Bay, where the bumpiness of the greens was a huge factor, and a couple years before that, I can't remember the course off the top of my head, but where the greens were just marble, I wouldn't be surprised to see something similar to that, especially if the temperature starts to heat up.
The difficulty of the U.S. Open, the Masters is a sacred weekend and can't really be touched, but and then the British Open with the ugly and the nasty of the wind and the rain, whatever. But the difficulty of the U.S. Open and how it baffles the world's best always blows me away.
This was a presentation, a segment of Olympic Homes. Get an Olympic coach in your corner and build with confidence. Visit them online at olympichomes.ca and the Big Show TSN 1290. Who do you gentlemen have winning this?
Well, I got to go with the best golfer in the world right now, being Dustin Johnson. And just especially with the length involved and how sound he is at getting to the green. But then with the trickiness, and I think the ghost of past struggles and making the putts he needs to make are behind him. But I got to go with Dustin Johnson here. Always cheering for Rory, but going to pick DJ.
DJ was made to win the U.S. Open. That'll be his tournament moving forward, and he's going to win for sure. I wouldn't be surprised to see him win 3 or 4 U.S. Opens. But I'm going to – you know, we had a Spaniard win the Masters. I'll take another Spaniard to win the U.S. Open, and I'll go with the rookie. I think Jon Rahm's going to surprise a lot of people here. He's been playing amazing golf all year long. I think he's going to –
I think the feisty Spaniard's going to find a way. That's a little hustler sprinkle, whatever odds he's bringing home kind of pick. A good pick there, Wicks.
I'm going to take Jordan Spieth. I think he's been playing well enough. I'm in a unique pool. Actually, Hustler's in a two where you pick three of the top 10 guys and you pick three guys out of the top 10 and your cumulative score throughout the tournament.
You guys in your crazy cookie pools.
I had Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, and Jordan Spieth. I got Jordan Spieth winning it. Outside the top 10, I had Justin Rose, Luis Oosthuizen. Oosthuizen!
Yeah, that's the one.
Thank you. And Thomas Peters, I believe it is. So I'm going to go with Peters as the dark horse. Yeah, the Belgian, yeah. Because when I was away for 2 weeks, I drank a lot of Belgian, so I'll parlay that into.
Fair.
But yeah, it's going to be so interesting. I mean, I agree. I think the greens are going to be just as interesting as the rough, and of course the bunkers are as well. The 117th U.S. Open is underway, and we'll discuss it more tomorrow, and of course wrap it up for you on Monday here on The Big Show. But up next, it's NHL News and Notes time on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. All you have to do is enter by rallying friends and family in your community to make a video about your hometown. Tell us how $25,000 could make it an even better place to live. Record the video telling us about your hometown and how they would spend $25,000, and send it to us at tsn1290.ca before noon on Friday, July the 14th. 10 finalists will be revealed on Monday, July the 24th. Then the public will vote for a winner to receive the $25,000. Manitobaville, make your hometown even prouder. Presented by Robertson College and proudly supported by Chicken Chef, Star Ready to Move Homes, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Merrick Contractors. For more information, official rules and regulations, visit tsn1290.ca. The Bombers host the Eskimos in their final preseason warm-up game. We'll have more on that at 8 o'clock when Milt Stegall joins us. But right now, NHL news and notes time. And gentlemen, Dan Girardi bought out by the New York Rangers. 3 years left on his deal. What are your thoughts on that move?
I don't think it surprises anybody who's watched much Rangers as of late whatsoever. He wasn't in a good place anymore and completely understand the move.
It was a move that had to be made, and I'm sure they'd like to buy out Mark Stahl too, but unfortunately he has that fourth year left on his deal, so a buyout would make that 8 years long. So Girardi's kind of the move that made the most sense, even though his cap hit will be going over the course of 6 years. But, that's really the only thing that's been holding the Rangers back is just if they could have gotten rid of both the Girardi and Stahl deals and can bring in a competent blue line to fill out what they have there. I mean, they'd be every bit of a cup contender out there in the East if they could shore up that a little bit. And I wouldn't be surprised at all, too, to see Ryan McDonagh have a Norris Trophy type of season now that he doesn't have to carry around the anchor that Girardi's been over the past few years.
It's a big thing to do, though, right, to fill – They got a big. It's a difficult thing for them to do to shore up that D core, right, to the degree necessary.
Should the Winnipeg Jets go and try and get Mark Mathot, left-handed D-man, 31 years old, with the Ottawa Senators? Looks to be like one of the guys on the odd man out on the protected list, as opposed to going to Vegas or once he is in Vegas. I had a couple people tweet at us, I think you got it as well, asking should the Jets maybe deal a prospect like a Patan or somebody like that to go get Mark Mathot at 31 years old to play the left side. 68 games last year, 12 assists.
That's a tough call. I think Mark Mathot, a fantastic compliment to Carlson, but boy, there's going to everything he's got is inflated because he's on the ice all the time with Carlson, right? So you're talking if he was coming in for a 5-6 type role, there's no doubt whatsoever. But you want him to come in a top four role and possibly be out there with Dustin Byfuglien. I don't know. It's one that I would tend to stay away and try and go after someone a little bit younger, I think. So I'll say hands off.
Yeah, I think if he has 2 years left on his contract with essentially a $5 million cap hit. If it was a one-year deal, then I think I'd be interested. But the 2 years when you have Ehlers and Morrissey and some of those guys coming up for deals after that, I just don't know. I don't know. That's a lot of dough. $5 million for a guy like Mark Mathot. Like, I just wonder if you can get similar. Like, if you wanted to get that rugged defensive defenseman type of mold, I feel like you can get someone with similar production for probably half the cost. And maybe cheaper. Could give you something a little bit better, too.
Erik Karlsson has surgery on his foot, ligament damage, tendons, out 4 months, which will take him right into the start of next season. Are you concerned about this?
No, not coming back. But it is interesting, like the tendons and all that. You wonder what caused the damage or how it was hurt, like within the foot. It's interesting. It was a turf toe sort of thing, and how does that happen in hockey? I wonder what was wrong with his foot.
I don't know. I guess once you get the fractured heel, one bone breaks, then the muscles start to break down, and like it's just kind of a cumulative thing. But the surgery he has there is almost just another peg in his playoff legacy that he had this year. Yeah. Like the fact that he had to play through the heel was one thing, but now that you have torn tendons in your foot and he was still, arguably the best player in the postseason.
You just got to freeze that sucker up though, right? Like he'd be out there with an absolute frozen foot.
Yeah. I think throughout the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see how quickly he comes back and how they react and treat him during training camp next season. And finally, gentlemen, the Ottawa Senators and Chris Neal are parting ways after 19 years and 1,026 games. The 37-year-old was informed he will not be re-signed by the club next year. Should he just retire as an Ottawa Senator now, or do you think he goes to free agency?
No, he is part of that dying out sort of breed, right? He's one of the final remaining guys that do what he does in the game. So
is
no,
Chris
nowhere
Neal done?
For him.
Yes. See, he's done a few years ago, to be honest with you.
Milt Stegall on the CFL and the Bombers next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the Walk for ALS Saturday, June 17th at Assiniboine Park. The Walk for ALS is the largest volunteer-led fundraiser for ALS across the country. Funds received support Canadians living with ALS and investing in research to make ALS a treatable, not terminal disease. To learn more or to register, visit walkforals.ca. The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rowicki with you. David Pagnata will join us at the bottom of the hour to talk some hockey. We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. It'll be open from 9 till 10, taking your calls on the Jets. And, of course, the Bombers and Eskimos. What are you expecting tonight and what are you looking for, especially from the Bombers side of things? To tee it up for us and to tee up the CFL season, we welcome back to the program former Blue Bomber great and, of course, a big part of the CFL on TSN, Mr. Milt Stegall. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Good, thank you. How did the off season treat you?
Oh, it's been great. You know, just spending time with the family. You know, because it's about to rev up now, so it'll be a lot of traveling. So I just try to, spend as much time as I can with them.
Excellent stuff. I guess we'll just start, Milt, with your some thoughts, I guess, on Don Matthews, who passed away at 77 years old, and maybe some of the experiences you had with him.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate. Don hadn't been doing too well over the past year, so it wasn't a surprise, but it was a surprise. You know, Don Matthews, he meant so much to the CFL, and he was a personality like no other. You know, he was a polarizing figure. You hate him or you love him, but you had to listen to him because the man brought a lot of credibility with him, and he was a winner. He knew how to get the best out of a player. Sometimes it was a scare tactic. Other times it was a motivating thing, but at the end of the day, Don Matthews was great for the CFL, and it's an unfortunate loss for all of us.
For us as Bombers, Milt, like I was saying earlier, he was almost like Darth Vader for us, right? Whether it was Baltimore or when he went to Montreal, like he was a force to be reckoned with. And what I'm not sure, like you have more relationships with players around the league. I know that the relationship he had with media was a little bit tense, and sometimes office staff as well. But he was pretty clear cut and cold. Cold with players. Like, if a guy dropped off, he didn't hesitate, bam, at all, to get rid of a dude, not give him much time to come around, and just move forward to the next guy, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that was Don Matthews. He would do anything it took to win. You know, he didn't let his personal feelings get in the way as far as if he needed to release a player or trade a player. He was very honest with you, and you have to respect that. You know, you have a lot of people in this industry who aren't that way, but Don, he would let you know how it was, and that's why he got the best out of his players. You know, they were almost scared to mess up because they knew if they messed up too many times, they wouldn't be around too long. So he got the best out of his players. He was honest with them. Some people felt he was too blunt, but at least you knew where he was coming from each and every time.
The rosters will be cut down on Saturday, Milt, and given the draft and free agency and everything else, what do you think of the Bombers so far this preseason?
I mean, I definitely thought they made some strides in the right direction. They needed to make some strides on that defensive line. They got Cummings and Opa-Galuga. I'm going to learn how to pronounce his name one day. But they definitely needed to better off their pass rush. The other thing is, I mean, the quarterback situation. We're going to see how that pans out. I mean, a lot of people like what happened with the quarterback situation last year. But, I mean, let's be honest about it. They were able to win all those games because of the turnovers and what they did on special teams. They didn't win those games because of the play of their quarterback. I like what I saw out of him in that playoff game and that loss to BC, but now we need to see that on a consistent basis if this team wants to compete in the West. The West is tough. I mean, by far the best division. It's not even close. The quarterback play, it's crazy. So he's going to have a big year if the Winnipeg Blue Bombers want to be able to compete each and every week.
Milt, I remember watching that playoff game and those final two drives that the BC offense went down the field and the Bomber D just couldn't get them off the field. It was like if they didn't create a turnover, there was no stopping the opposing team on second downs for the Bombers. Is there any question at all that the defense and disrupting the quarterback is number one must for the Bombers this year?
1 through 10. They have to make it happen. They can't rely on those defensive back, linebackers, whoever, you know, creating turnovers or one of the punt returners return a punt for a touchdown and putting them in great field position. They have to say we have to put some pressure on the quarterback. We know in this league they're passing the ball 85% of the time, so if you can't put any pressure on the quarterback, it's going to be difficult to be competitive and win games. So hopefully they address that. Hopefully defensive coordinator Coach Ritchie, he can produce some different things, because if not, it's going to be difficult for them to win unless they can produce all those turnovers like they did last year. I don't think that's going to happen. That's a once in a lifetime thing, but if it works for them, it works for them. But they have to find a way to get some pressure on the quarterback.
Milt, what do you think of the Vince Young experiment, and does he make the team now that he's out 4 to 6 weeks?
Man, Vince Young, the last time he played in a meaningful game was 2011. The last time I played, I retired in 2009. So that means I can come back and try to play. I don't understand what Chris Jones is thinking. You can't get somebody off of their couch who hadn't played in a meaningful game in 6 years, regardless of how well they played back then or how well of a shape they're in, and think you're going to come out and be able to produce. You have somebody who's going to a totally different league. He did okay in NFL, but he wasn't that good in the NFL. So they just think he can come up here and produce. I don't know if it was publicity stunt trying to sell some more season tickets, but I mean, like most rookies in his situation, when they get hurt, they cut him. Is Chris Jones going to do that? I don't know, because they made such a big deal out of his signing. If I was a betting man, I think they're going to keep him around, get him healthy, and see what happens with him. But I wasn't surprised about, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't want to see anybody get hurt, but I wasn't surprised about it, because you take that amount of time off, the body, the mind is just not able to adjust to a different type of game like Vince Young had to do.
Milt, I think the home record for Eastern teams last year was something like 10-25-1, something almost impossible to imagine. Of all the struggles that we saw in the East last year and this year coming into it, who do you see as the favorite to win the East?
I would go with Hamilton. Big reason, I like what they did with their defense. They signed the most talented defensive back, in my opinion, in free agency, and Abdul Kane. And I think Zach Collars is 100%. And we know what he can do when he's 100%. He's right there with Bo Levi and Mike Riley as far as quarterbacks go when he's 100%. And he's the best quarterback in the East by far. You have Darren Durant, who could be the best quarterback, but you don't know how many games he's going to play. Ricky Ray, we don't know what we're going to get out of him, and we know who's the backup over there. And then you have Trevor Harris, and this is his job now, but he hasn't been consistent when he was a starter. So Zach Collars is by far the best quarterback, and I think they'll win the East. Actually, it won't even be close. I think they'll win the East going away.
Milt Stegall joining us here on The Big Show, previewing the CFL season and the Bombers, of course. TSN 1290, 11 minutes past the hour. Were you one of the few that went to the Argonauts preseason game?
Argonauts had a preseason game? No, I'm just joking. No, well, actually, I was. We were working. We were working another game that night. So we were in studio. We were watching it. They had a feed up, and we were watching it, and we saw there weren't many people in the stands. You know, that team, they're going to have to win some games. They start winning some games, people will come out. Last year, early on, people were coming out, but when they weren't winning, people don't want to be, you know, they don't want to support a loser. I don't care who you have on the field, who you're trying to market. If they win games, they will have people come out. There are enough people in Toronto who will support them if they win games. All they need is 20,000 to 25,000 people per game, and they will be productive. But they have to find a way to win games and win early.
That's an interesting take. Remember just a couple of years ago when they won that Grey Cup at home and they had Ricky Ray and all the rest of it, it just didn't carry over. So you feel that it's just sort of winning is the formula that they need to tap into and that things can be salvaged in Toronto then, Milt?
It's a change of venue. You remember in Montreal when they moved from the Big O to their new place? It was a change of venue. And they were winning when they were in the Big O. I mean, not like they were when they moved outdoors, but they were winning, but people just didn't want to go to that venue. This new venue is something special. It's more than just a football game. There's other things going on, the setting, the atmosphere, the energy, everything with it. They will enjoy it, but they have to produce some victories. If they do that, I guarantee you we'll see a different outcome. We'll see more people at BMO Field.
What's your guess right now? And the rosters have to be cut down and everything, Milt. But where do you think the Bombers finish in the regular season in the West?
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot right now.
I know, I know.
I'm gonna say they'll make the playoffs. It'll be third or fourth. They may have to cross over, but they will make the playoffs. The West is just so tough. Unless Bo Levi Mitchell and Mike Riley and Jonathan Jennings just stink it up or get hurt, it's going to be difficult to play with those guys. Saskatchewan even has it stacked up. I mean, Kevin Glenn, of course, he's not what he used to be, but they have a mean receiving core over there, the second best in the league, in my opinion, only behind BC. So the Bombers are going to have to play some great ball. I think they'll make the playoffs. Like I said, I think third or fourth, they'll be scratching at the door, but I just about guarantee they'll make it to the playoffs. They may have to cross over, but they'll be in the playoffs.
I wonder, what are you thinking? Chris Jones just on the hot seat. Man, I spent some time in Saskatchewan. I can't believe how many people are just on the edge or want his head already in Saskatchewan. I'm assuming he's got a pretty short leash here, Milt. What do you think Saskatchewan accomplishes or fails to accomplish this year?
Well, if they don't make the playoffs, I think there's a good chance he may be gone. He's made too many mistakes. He's been fined too many times. And it's been all him. He's in total control. He makes every single football decision. There's no one making any suggestions to him. He makes every final decision. So this is all on him. I think, you know, last year it was almost, okay, we'll give you a mulligan, as they call it. You know, that was your first year. You're trying to figure things out. But now you have all the people you want in there. This is on you. If he does not get this together this year, I think he's gone. I think they'll give him the entire year. They won't do it midway through the season or towards the end of the season. I think they'll give him the entire year. But if they don't make the playoffs, I think he's gone. They have a good chance. Like I said, that receiving core is stacked. They won't be able to keep all those guys. He has some good pieces on defense. He has one of the better, maybe the most athletic defense in, and Willie Jefferson. They have some other guys who can play. But as we always say, it's on Kevin Glenn. If Kevin Glenn can get it done, if he can be half of what he used to be, I think they have a good shot in making the playoffs. And if they don't, that may be the end of Chris Jones in Saskatchewan.
Finally, and on a totally different note, Milt, who wins the Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather fight on August 26th, or do you care?
I'm not a – I hate MMA. My stomach's too weak. I'm not a boxing fan because it's not boxing like it used to be, but it won't be close. I mean, McGregor is not a boxer. Floyd Mayweather is one of the best defensive boxers of all time. He knows how to stabilize himself. He's a defensive guy. He's not going to get hit. And if you open up to him, he's going to give a shot in there. I think the better fight would be if Conor McGregor just lost it and took him down to the floor, got a submission hold or something. That would be more adventurous than what we're actually going to see. What we're going to see is going to be nothing. Conor McGregor, he may just tire out and stop. Floyd Mayweather is just too great of a fighter. It won't be a contest. They're going to build it up to be a contest, and these guys will make a bunch of money, but it won't be that much of a venture at all. I'm not looking forward to it. I'll watch it because I'll hopefully get to watch it somewhere for free, but it's not going to be that much of a fight.
Always great talking to you, Milt. We appreciate you taking some time and look forward to talking to you throughout the CFL season.
All right, sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much, Turtle Man. Take care, brother.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's almost the same philosophy you had, is it's in McGregor's contract that you can't kick Mayweather, but after six rounds, you just go, whatever.
He just might, even out of habit, right? And some of those sort of when the boxers grapple each other and hold each other, he might make a mistake or two as he gets a little bit tired. I'm telling you, man, a Superman punch. Look out for that during the early stages of this fight.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a part of the iHeartRadio Network. Download the iHeartRadio app and listen to us on all your favorite devices, or go to the Perfect Four section and choose from hundreds of channels to suit any mood or music taste. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and get streaming. A full coverage today on Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day starting at 5:30, and we have a pair of tickets to give to you to tonight's preseason game. You'll have to pick them up before our offices close this today, of course, as the game is tonight on Pembina Highway. But 780-1290 if you'd like a pair of tickets to the Bomber Eskimo preseason game this evening. We'll take a break. Much more to come on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on the Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon. And congratulations to George Kunde. He's our winner of the Bomber Eskimo preseason game tickets tonight. And, of course, Manuk Dencher game day here for the Blue Bombers starts at 5:30 with Troy Westwood in the panel with host Darren Bombing and Chris Walby. Mr. Walby, how'd he off-season?
Always a bunch of fun.
How'd he off-season? Well,
he had a hip replaced in the off-season, man. So he's back and he's ready to put on the pads again now.
I saw him at the Poker for a Purpose you and I were at, and I said, by training camp, you'll be ready to go. And he goes, I'll give it a shot if they want to sign me.
You're darn right.
No problem.
He can give you four quarters. There's no question about that.
I'm still in love with the Barkley quote about Tristan Thompson with the 0 points, zero rebounds, zero assists in the NBA final game. And he said, I'm an old fat man, and you give me 20 minutes, I'll get you three rebounds.
Tristan Thompson. What a waste. So the level of relax and lazy to that, there's nothing I detest more in sports than that.
And Chris Walby, I think if
was the opposite of pistol.
Yes.
The opposite.
You put him in a game for 20 minutes, I bet you he gets a couple of knocks in for sure. Game tonight, of course, and pregame show, Manuk Dencher, Blue Bomber game day here starts at 5:30 on TSN 1290. So we were discussing, like, if it did come down to forwards, Dano or Armia, and Andrew Kopp is the guy that you guys were throwing out there as well. He's also a trade candidate if you can't protect him on if the Jets would look at moving him as opposed to losing him maybe in the expansion draft. 142 games played, 16 goals, 15 assists, 31 points. And he is a center. Two full seasons now in the National Hockey League. Played one game in 2014-15 when they signed him out of the University of Michigan. 77 games in his rookie year. 64 games in his second year, including eight, not including eight, down with the Moose at the start of the year. Then he got called up and he never looked back. 142 games, 31 points, and he is a center. What is the ceiling in your guys' mind for Kopp? And what could you potentially get for him if they did want to move him prior to the expansion draft or after?
See, I'm not up for that at all in
moving him.
Yeah, like not knowing. So let's say you move, for instance, you trade Kopp, knowing that now they'll take Dano, and you trade Kopp for what, picks?
Well,
I don't like that at all. To me, you're going to lose a guy. Just the way you've heard some organizations come out and say, "Hey, look, we're going to lose a guy. We're going to move forward with what we got." To me, instead of having some sort of fire sale because you're scared of a guy being taken, like, what's the likelihood that what you get back in a trade is going to turn into the Kopp or the Dano that you traded in the first place? And also, because of how critical the season is for the Jets and where they are in their growth as a team, one of those two guys is going to play an important role, quite possibly, with this team on the third or fourth line going forward. So I would not dish off whichever of those two I thought would be possibly picked here.
Well, you know, I've been throwing the center names out in order for the team to go get a D-man, a left-handed D.
Yeah.
So I will throw his name in with those like the Patans and the Roslovics and whoever else.
And I just don't think Cobb's going to get a whole lot back for you in a trade.
Certainly not a top four left-handed D guy.
Yeah, no. So like I just don't see the need to trade him. Just like a Nick Patan, for example, I think would have more value because of the potential that he holds. But for a guy like Andrew Kopp, like Troy said, what are you going to get for him? Like a team would probably offer like a middle round pick, and at that point, you're probably waiting on that guy for 3 or 4 years, and you kind of hope that he turns into Andrew Kopp. So it's like it's an exercise in futility.
Yeah.
I think like just hold on to him. If you can keep him, great. If you lose him in the expansion draft, it sucks. But in all reality, it wouldn't be the biggest loss in the world for this team.
You make a good point because Kopp's a fourth-round pick, 104th overall in 2013. Sort of just delaying what you have.
Yeah, like just be happy with what you got right now.
Yeah, right now you got a guy you know can be a good contributor, whether he's just sitting outside your the fourth line sort of a situation or if he's going to be out there, and especially on the wing where he seemed to flourish, but also at center. Right, like he can make an impact in that manner as well, and could quite possibly get up to maybe 12, 15 goals this year.
He impressed me the way he moved up the lines this year and filled in when there were some injuries and moved to the wing. Like the versatility of Andrew Kopp impressed me this year more so than I thought he had in his game.
Agreed. Like he skates well, rugged, just smart. He's got a sneaky, wicked release.
That's his best quality by far.
Yeah, like wicked, sneaky release. So it's there's still some ceiling here involved with Andrew Kopp, and you just kind of wonder where he can take it.
We'll take a break and talk some more hockey around the league as we grow closer to expansion draft protected list weekend and then the draft itself next week and the NHL draft. David Pagnotta joins us next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg competing in challenges and puzzles with your team celebrity on September 22nd and the 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. And to learn more or to register, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on The Big Show, TSN 1290. It's supposed to be warmer out today, maybe a few showers, not as many as yesterday or throughout the day yesterday. 33 minutes past the hour, and of course it is a Blue Bomber game day as their final preseason game for both them and the Edmonton Eskimos, who visit IGF tonight, gets underway. Minuk Dencher game day returns to TSN 1290, 5:30 p.m. That gets started. Rick Ralph of the Don Vito Roundtable at 11 a.m. Hustler of the Gondola Pizza warm-up at 2, and then the afternoon ride with Hustler goes at 3 o'clock till 5:30 when our Minuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day takes over as well. Lots talking about as the weekend inches closer with the protected lists, the draft, everything that's coming up in the next week and a half in the National Hockey League. And to talk about it, we welcome back to the program from thefourthperiod.com, David Pagnotta. How are you, sir?
Fantastic. How's it going?
We're doing well here, and we know more than anybody the Winnipeg Jets like to keep everything and anything in-house. What are you hearing concerning the expansion draft in the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, they're trying to, like every team, you know, they're trying to explore all their options. They're trying to see you know, what player they could coerce Vegas into selecting for them to keep, you know, certain guys protected. There's some talk of, you know, the usual suspects that pop up in trade discussions. Overall, that could lead to them protecting other players. Jacob Trouba's name is starting to be tossed around again. But for the most part, nothing overly serious at this stage. Like you said, the Jets, the Canadians, there are a number of teams, Toronto now with Lamoriello, there are a lot of teams now that are keeping things quiet, especially as it relates to the expansion draft. And with the NHL kind of berating all of their teams and GMs a few days ago, telling them to stop leaking stuff to the media as it relates to the expansion draft, it's gotten a little tighter these last couple of days.
As has been reported, the Vegas trades won't be announced until protection lists are submitted on Saturday. David, how profound could these trades be in your estimation?
Well, there's at least three that have already been agreed upon. Anaheim, Columbus, and Chicago. Chicago one being, I guess, the most publicized at this stage, with Marcus Kruger being the player everyone expects to go to Vegas, and the Knights to then select Trevor Van Riemsdyk. The Anaheim Ducks deal with Vegas is a pretty solid deal as well. Vegas is taking on a contract. They're getting some compensation out of it, and they're selecting a pretty decent player. At least that's what I'm being told from the Ducks. I believe it is not Jakob Silverberg or Rickard Rakell. I think they're going to be going on a 7-3-1 format, 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and a goalie. But that's another deal that's going to be pretty solid in terms of, from Vegas' perspective anyway, in who they're ultimately going to end up. There are other teams that are making some moves that are trying to do the same thing. You know, Minnesota, for one, has been trying to finalize a trade with Vegas so that they get some of their players protected. They're in a tough spot in terms of how many quality guys could potentially be available to Vegas. So Chuck Fletcher, their GM, is trying to maneuver something with George McPhee, the Knights GM. And Nashville also in the same boat with the amount of forwards that they have available, because they're going to be protecting 4D, 4 forwards, and obviously Pekka, who's got a no move. So they've got about 4 quality forwards that are going to be available. Sissons, Neal, Wilson, and I can't remember the 4th guy off the top of my head, but there's the potential for Nashville to lose a significant player as well, especially one that's helped them throughout their cup run.
And concerning Vegas outside of that, how many deals do you expect just going around the National Hockey League? Is it going to be very busy? I know we, you know, yeah, in the media like to talk trade deadline. We like to talk July 1st, and it doesn't matter how much action. It never lives up to the hype. How much is this going to live up to the hype concerning other teams around Vegas?
Things obviously always change, but if things go you know, half as many people expect, there's going to be a lot of activity. You know, the usual suspects that are out there, the Eberleys, the Duchesnes, these players, everyone believes, myself included, that they're going to be traded. Ilya Kovalchuk, to my knowledge, there's a deal in place already to move him to an Eastern Conference team once they agree upon a contract extension. Now, he can't be traded until July 1st. They can't orchestrate all of that until July 1. But my understanding is that he is going to be returning to the National Hockey League, agreeing to a new contract and being traded to a team in the East. So there are a lot of moving parts here that could potentially come into play, especially this week as teams try to figure out their cap situations. That's the other thing. Once the cap is finalized at the end of the week, that'll determine how much room teams have to play with. Now, the cap is going up. It'll be at least $75 million next season, so that's a $2 million bump. But there's a lot of people on the PA side that are pushing for it to go up another $2 million. So that'll be determined by the end of the week, and that'll help teams in terms of what their plans are going to be and what plans they're going to have to maneuver. Tampa Bay is in a spot where they're going to trade at least two players, two current roster players, and it could be Tyler Johnson, it could be Jonathan Drouin, Vladimir Namestnikov, Jason Garrison. They've got to clear up some cap space and shore up that blue line. And I suspect we're going to see multiple moves from Tampa between now and the NHL draft.
David, you also reported that the Coyotes had talked to Columbus about picking up Clarkson. So if you're a fan of the Coyotes here, they, again, are just trying to wrestle their way to the cap floor, huh?
Yeah, they were in talks with Columbus about bringing on David Clarkson's contract. There are some players in the National Hockey League that, you know, they're still under contract, like Clarkson. Their careers are pretty much done from a playing perspective. But the way that they went out, the insurance on their deals are pretty beneficial to the team that basically owns them. The cap hit still remains the same, and he's got a 5.25 cap hit. But after insurance coming into play, the team is only paying just over $1 million in actual money versus the $50 million that he's owed over the next 3 years on his contract. For Vegas, that would potentially be acquiring, by all accounts, David Clarkson. You know, they're willing to give up that cash. They don't really need the cap space but if they want to attribute his $5.25 million, they can. But that's what Arizona was trying to do. Now, there are other options for the Coyotes. They're looking at that. There are also, you know, some talk of potentially going after Martin Hanzel as a free agent to potentially bring him back, move Mike Smith, reaffirm their goaltending position with a younger guy who might fit in the long-term plan. So there's going to be some maneuvering from the Coyotes' perspective. But they're also looking on to take on, you know, some extra cap space. With the new ownership in place, or revised ownership in place, as Andrew Barroway is now the sole owner of the Coyotes, and he's working with the Phoenix Suns of the NBA to figure out a new facility, and it seems like they're making some pretty solid traction there. They're going to eventually start to, you know, go back into that competitive nature when they were in the playoffs, but they want to do that with the younger team. So you got to let the young kids develop, and you got to get some money on the cap. They could go after a guy like Clayton Stoner of Anaheim. They could go after a Joffrey Lupul with the Leafs. There are options for Arizona, and they're exploring them.
David Pagnata, TheFourthPeriod.com, joining us this morning on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 41 minutes past the hour. Are you surprised the Rangers bought out Dan Girardi, and what is his future?
I'm surprised that they went through with it. I'm not surprised at the decision overall, but I'm surprised that the Rangers actually went through with it. There was a lot of talk that they were very hesitant about doing that. Dan Girardi is a great guy and a great team player, and somebody that they valued within the locker room, and they were, you know, made mention of that in the press release when they announced that they were, you know, their intentions of buying him out. He'll pop up somewhere. There's no question. Still a very serviceable defenseman, just wasn't at the, you know, $5+ million cap hit. He'll probably find a new home around, you know, $2.5-3 million on a short-term deal, and ultimately end up making more money than he was anyway. So it's a win for him. Just not going to be in New York anymore. There are going to be contending teams that want to shore up that blue line, that want to bring in quality depth on the back end, and know that they could put him on a third pair position and limit his minutes, which would effectively make him more productive. That's something similar that we saw with a guy like Dion Phaneuf when he went to Ottawa and he wasn't given top tier minutes. They were able to take off 2-3 minutes a game, and he was more effective that way. I figure that that's going to be what's going to happen with Girardi wherever he ends up. But it was a good move for the Rangers' perspective because they've got cap issues. They're trying to figure out what they're doing. They're talking to teams about Derek Stepan. They're talking to teams about Mark Stahl, potentially moving him out. So this is the type of activity that's happening right now. It's not just, you know, expansion related. It's cap related, and some teams that just want to readjust their roster for next season because they believe that they can, you know, remain competitive and go after, you know, a Stanley Cup championship. And you know, assuming that Pittsburgh has been beaten up, you know, over these last two runs, there's some teams that feel that this could be their time to pounce.
David, we here in Winnipeg look at the Central and wonder what team or teams the team will be able to leapfrog over to find their way into a playoff spot. And looking at Chicago, Minnesota, St. Louis, Nashville finishing ahead of Winnipeg, and then expecting Hitchcock to do something to fairly dramatically improve Dallas, a lot of people look at St. Louis thinking that's the team that is likely to fall the most in the Central. Do you agree with that?
They should be. You know, a lot of it's going to depend on what they're looking to do. They're another team that's looking to, you know, retool a little bit, whether it's, you know, Laterra or another player on that team, your Laterra that they're trying to move out to free up some cap space to tinker a little bit more. But the way that things are looking, this is a team that could potentially, you know, fall outside of that range, outside of that bubble. From the overall perspective, I think that, you know, based on the teams in front of Winnipeg, this is another club that's trying to figure out their goaltending situation from a long-term perspective. And if they can bring in somebody else that they feel outside of the organization that could fill that role, there's a good chance they're going to do it if the opportunity certainly arises. Even with that, let's say they do bring in somebody, you know, that they feel is capable of handling the number one duties better than what they've got right now, then this is a team based on the teams in front of them that are still looking at a wild card position. I think San Jose may be regressing a little bit. Depends on their moves. You know, Joe Thornton wants a multi-year deal. The Sharks don't want to give it to him. Patrick Marleau, I believe his time in San Jose is coming to an end, and he'll look to play somewhere else, perhaps Dallas, a team that's looking for some additional strength on the wings. And that could, you know, also affect Winnipeg's situation. But I think for the most part, with the younger kids in place, they shore up the goaltending a little bit. They'll certainly compete, but with the teams in front of them, you know, you look at wild card and you just go from there. But you set the bar at that point, and you hope you exceed it, no doubt.
David, always great stuff, and going to be a very exciting rest of the month for sure. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy the rest of the week.
All right, thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Great stuff, David. Thanks so much.
At the fourth period is where you can follow David as well. We'll talk more about this and tee up the Boss Pizza fan line when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
And TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for the 2017 Canada Summer Games, July 28th to the August 13th in the city. The opening ceremonies at MTS Center on Friday, July 28th. You can get tickets for that. You can also get tickets for the closing ceremonies on Sunday, August 13th at Investors Group Field, including a bunch of tickets as well when you go to Ticketmaster.ca to get your tickets for the Canada Games. To stay up to date on event details, ticket offers, and more, visit 2017canadagames.ca or TSN1290.ca. And make sure you help paint the town red, yellow, and orange every Friday, including tomorrow, up until July 21st. Wear your official 2017 Canada Games gear clothing. Take a picture of yourself and share the photo using the handle at 2017 Canada Games and the hashtag GearUp for a chance to win a Via Rail promotional travel credit. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for more information about game day game gear Fridays, I should say. The Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Boss Pizza fan line open for a full hour starting at 9 o'clock, 780-1290. You can also text us if you want to get in the conversation. Text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Lots to get to today, gentlemen. We'll start with the big news yesterday of the Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight. August 22nd, it will be boxing only in Vegas. You can't kick them, Connor. But you made up the point. The instinct sets in.
Well, it just might take – like there might be times, you know, when the boxers are hugging and sort of a little bit of grapples there until the ref comes over and separates them. You can't help but wonder if in some of those – let's say this goes into the fifth, sixth round and McGregor's getting really tired and they're in those situations. You see it in UFC all the time when a knee comes up into the kidney sort of thing, right? So you just – you got to wonder if something like that happens. Interestingly, in the contract there is a situation where – Conor McGregor will be sued. There's a lawsuit that can be brought towards him if he kicks Floyd Mayweather. So it will be interesting. Although I don't see anything for Superman punches, and I'm completely expecting – like, has Floyd Mayweather ever dealt with a Superman punch? I don't think so, and I don't think it's an illegal move in boxing.
I don't think you can catch him, though. I just I know he's 40, but he's just so quick, both with his punches, his jabs, and his feet.
And to me, what I'm really interested in is the movement of this fight. Early on, you know darn well Conor McGregor will be the aggressor, will be coming forward. So, you know, Floyd Mayweather's going to be bouncing outside, bouncing outside, bouncing outside, and basically looking for Conor McGregor to tire out, and then he'll take over the fight if it goes past 3-4 sort of thing. But will Conor McGregor be able to cut the ring off on Floyd Mayweather to not let him out? And eventually, can he get him a situation where he's up against the ropes or in a corner and that sort of thing so that Conor McGregor could try and unleash that bomb? I do think that there will be a couple of opportunities for him to land one. The big question is, will he be able to make contact? I'm fascinated by this. I know a lot of people are kind of spitting at the ground and scoffing. Boxing purists are basically disgusted at this. But there's a couple of factors that come into play here. The world telling Conor McGregor, you don't have a chance. 28 versus 40. And you got the power of Conor McGregor. Just those things, I think he's going to be a bull in there the first 2-3 rounds. And if I'm Floyd Mayweather, I'm not going to take him lightly or for granted early on, or he might catch you.
Yeah, well, you know, when the Matador fights the bull, the Matador usually ends up on top, if I believe. So all the Matador's got to do is ole the Irish bull a couple of times. And I'm not expecting a whole lot. I think if you're a fan of watching a guy get tired for 6 rounds, then this fight's for you. Because I just don't see McGregor finding a way to land any punch through the first couple of rounds. And then
he'll
at that
throw
point,
a lot of punches.
He'll throw a lot. He'll throw a lot. I don't think he's going to hit a lot of them, though. And then at that point, it gets into the Floyd Mayweather defensive shell, and it'll
then,
be jab,
then
jab,
the
jab.
Starts,
and,
right?
Yeah, and that's and McGregor, like you said earlier, and like I think most boxing pundits are going to say, if this fight is not over after 3 rounds,
it's over.
Turn the TV off.
Yeah. The boxing starts probably after, to start round 4, right? And the second they start boxing, then Floyd Mayweather will win this. His last 7 fights, he's won in decision. He has no problem going 12 rounds. It's really hard for me to imagine Conor McGregor lasting 12 rounds. You know, so if he's going to win this, and all the drama will be in rounds 1, 2, and 3.
Don't you think that Mayweather could knock McGregor out as well?
Well, like, for sure. After
fight, like he could get in there and just
when you watch, I was watching some video of McGregor fighting yesterday, and when typically in UFC when he's throwing his bombs, he's really leaving himself exposed. So if McGregor can juke and dive around those bombs being thrown and then counter in those situations, there's no doubt that he can catch McGregor pretty flush. I don't know. I think if you're Floyd Mayweather in this, though, you just want to let him throw those and make sure that you don't get hit. Don't worry too much about the counter early on. But if this goes 4, 5, 6 and McGregor's getting more and more tired and therefore more and more careless with protection, that's when Floyd Mayweather for sure can catch him and knock him out.
And bring on the press conferences. Mayweather-McGregor, August 26. Who do you have winning that fight?
Well, I hate Floyd Mayweather, so I can't. I mean, obviously he should. He's the heavy-duty favorite here, but I'm just hoping like heck that Conor McGregor can shock the world. I wouldn't put a dime on this, but I'm definitely going to be cheering for Conor McGregor.
I'd love to see McGregor win. It's just not going to happen. So if I had to put some money on it, I'd put it on Floyd. I'm sure Floyd will put some money on himself, too, and he'll probably take home $1 million instead of $100 million.
He's actually already applied for 5 trademarks that incorporate 50-0. So he's his legacy.
And he's going to get $100 million, and McGregor's getting $75 million.
The interesting thing, though, right, he's That whole, to the degree that this is fat and sassy, you can't beat me. The whole world's telling Floyd that McGregor can't beat him. And at the same time, the whole world's telling this Irish kid, this right, the yappy Irish punk, you don't have a chance. I don't know, man. Watch it, Conor McGregor. You tell him that he doesn't have a chance a couple times and see what kind of response you get.
You need to apologize to my big Irish. Who do you have in the fight? And, of course, Bombers, Eskimos tonight. Who do you have in this game, or what are you looking for specifically? And what would you do if you're the Winnipeg Jets, protection-wise? Is it 4-4-1? Is it 7-3-1? And whom are you protecting? 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN1290 and United Firefighters of Winnipeg present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090 with standard message rates may be applying. Every time you do, United Firefighters of Winnipeg will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more information on Michaela and Caring for Kids, visit tsn1290.ca. Caring for Kids is presented by United Firefighters of Winnipeg. TSN 1290. You can also text 129090 right now to weigh in on the conversation that we are going to have on, and the conversations, I should say, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who do you have winning the McGregor-Mayweather fight? Also, what would you do if you're the Jets and the expansion draft? Whom would you protect, and would you go 4-4-1 or 7-3-1? What would you do with that? And, gentlemen, Phil Mickelson has withdrawn from the U.S. Open in order to attend his daughter's graduation. Would you do that?
It's an interesting question. Like, there's two ways I have to look at it. Well, I think from my or our perspective, we're like, you're going to skip a U.S. Open, man, and one where you've never won. Like, that's the one that has escaped him, right? He's got, I think, second or tied for second 6 times. And that's the one major he hasn't got in the years that are going by him here, that where each time it's going to get more difficult as the years go by at 46 years old. So that, I go, I wouldn't skip it. But then you look at a guy and you go, okay, well, I got 42 wins, PGA Tour wins in the bank, and I've got 5 majors to my name. So this has been real normalized, and it is his world. It's another chance for an Open, but they'll be next year. So I can understand why he'd make that decision. And understand why some who have never had the chance to ever swing a club once in a PGA event would go, oh my goodness, how do you miss the U.S. Open to go see your daughter's graduation? I will say this, though, is that in the States, and even like, and especially like, I graduated in the States, I know how the nations are different, that it's that much more important down there. So I tip my hat to him for doing it for his girl, who for sure would want her daddy there, right? I understand that.
Well, it is Phil, so it's not like you're hurting for money or golf titles or anything like that. And there's only one graduation.
Well, he is hurting for a U.S. Open golf title.
And that's what I mean. Like, the vice versa of that. Like, I graduated college twice, and my father didn't come. He was working. And I don't know. I know the emphasis in the States is a lot bigger on graduation and what that. But would you, if you're Phil, would you one time your daughter's graduating?
Well, if I'm Phil, I just hang it up. I just hang it up.
Says the Tiger guy.
I'm just like, it's just not worth it anymore, man.
Is Phil a Penguins fan? Is that why you have this?
Any of us, guy. If your daughter looked you in the eye and said, Daddy, you're gonna, and it meant the world to her, you're going, man. There's
for
no
sure.
way
that's,
not
that's,
going.
That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I was
it's
fine
easy
with
to say
with,
it's easy to say, but if you have a little girl, and I, my brother has, I have a couple of nieces, and if they were, well, Uncle Brandon, we need you to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, don't worry. I'll figure a way out of this.
Yeah.
So I think I don't know if there's any parents that wouldn't, that would skip it in all reality.
Yeah, if it's, yeah, it'd be a, yeah, I agree. There's just no way when you got a little, and no matter how old, I know she's, what, 18 or whatever, she's your little monkey, right? So you're still looking at a little girl, right? So, yeah, there's just no way. And, hey, he's got always got the out now in 5 years. You never won a U.S. Open. You go, I would have won in 17, but.
The old school Hungarian way is you're supposed to graduate college. Why would I come?
Do we need like an hour? I'm working.
Like no, no. Like I said, I was fine with it. Like I didn't have a problem that my dad was working.
I didn't even go to my high school grad, man. I went on a fishing trip up to Simon House Lake. It means nothing to me. So but I know for sure things are a different deal down south for sure.
780-129 in the Boss Pizza fan line. We'll ask you about that. We'll ask you what the Jets should do in the Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather fight. Who do you have winning that? Quickly before we get to the phone line, Darren Drigger just tweeting, I'm surprised to learn the Sabres did not contact Rick Tocchet about coaching vacancy. Jason Botterill, the former Penguins assistant GM there, not contacting Rick Tocchet about the head coaching vacancy in Buffalo. Interesting. It was rumored that he and Phil Housley were the front runners. Ray, you're on the big show on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hey, I just want to quickly talk about the whole Gano and Armia stuff.
Sure.
I think just want to preface by saying, like, both these guys are kind of third, fourth line. Like, they score under 20 points a year. Like, any of them wouldn't be a huge loss, I would say. Like, you could find wingers on the UFA pretty easily. But just having said that, I think Dano, like, he's getting a little undervalued here. Like, he has better points per 60 than Armia. He has a better Corsi than Armia. He has a better career points per game than Armia. His Jets, like, in his Jets career, he has 19 points in 59 games. Armia last season had 19 points in 57 games. Like, they're kind of identical. Having said that, Dano's playing primarily with Chris Thorburn and Mick Natan, like, two guys who probably shouldn't be in the NHL, and Armia's with Lowry and Mathias, like a definite upgrade, I'd say. And then I'd say Armia, like four of his 10 goals were shorthanded. Like I would say that's a little fluky to have 40% of your goals shorthanded, right? Like it's great he's scoring shorthanded, but that's not sustainable year in, year out. People say he's a great penalty killer. I don't know, it's hard to say any penalty killer on our team is great when we're ranked 26th in penalty killing. Like, he's good, but it could definitely be an improvement. But yeah, that's all I just want to talk about, but the whole Dano Armia. Yeah, I think either of the guys wouldn't be a huge loss, but I think Dano's getting a little undervalued. He has not been put in a position to succeed on this team, in my opinion, at least.
You bring up a great point, Ray, because when I was looking at the numbers last night, that's why I brought it up, that I like Dano. I would want to keep him on the team, but if you lose him, so be it. And I'm a little higher on Armia, but when I ran the numbers last night, like Dano has just as much upside as Armia, I would think. But yet he doesn't get the credit for it because maybe he's been traded three times, or nobody brings up the fact that Armia was traded.
Yeah, I don't know. Like upside, you're talking ceiling. So from what, and hey, maybe Dano does, but from what I saw last year, when you're talking ceiling, that there is a brilliance to Armia's game. You see flashes of brilliance. You don't see that from Dano. Dano's a super hard-working cat, and I made it clear what I think about him yesterday. But there's a level of brilliance, flashes of it, that you see from Joel Armia that makes everybody stop and go, holy cow, did you see that? And you don't see that from Dano. So different sort of, I think, different skill set, both, though, impactful. And we're saying it's easy to go get a third line guy, easy to go get a fourth line guy. That bottom six is what is going to project the Jets to go forward, and having guys that can play at a high defensive level. And the cool thing with both those guys, they both bring solid, strong 200-foot type games. Those guys aren't easy to come by. Getting those guys that can contribute at, you know, 0.3 points per game or something in and around that, they aren't easy to come by. The Jets have had a heck of a time finding those guys. It is only now that they've got those types of guys. So I think they are absolute. Look at the contributing factors for any of the teams that go deep into the playoffs, how critical lines 3 and 4 are. They're hugely important.
And a lot of people talk about, and including myself, Dano's been traded three times. What's that? You know, and then you look at the trades, and he's the key member that other teams wanted. So albeit he has been traded from Columbus and Chicago, it was the key ingredient going the other way. So you can look at it that way.
And he's still super young. I don't put any stock in that at all.
Whereas Armia was literally a throw-in the trade that brought him to Winnipeg. It was much different than I'm just saying, like, a lot of people say of the two, Armia by far and away. I think it's a great point Ray brings up. And then when you talk about Danone, well, if he does get claimed, it'll be his fourth team in his young career and all this. But Armia was traded too, and he was literally the throw-in as opposed to the focal point in the Dano trades.
But I think when we discuss these players, it's important to take into consideration where they apparently or how they are valued by the organization. And there's no doubt that Joel Armia is, by all tests in what we see last year, is more highly held than Marco Dano at this point in time. Marco Dano somewhere at the bottom. We saw him, you know, Paul Maurice coming out saying he's got to play his way back into the lineup somehow, which mystified a lot of people. So, which is why I think there's so much more conversation about Dano and Kopp than, for instance, Dano and Armia.
Thanks for the call, Ray. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, and also on text if you want to weigh in with your opinion. Text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Norm, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks.
I was going to say, I think the smarter GMs will be the ones that do make a deal with Las Vegas. I think it's then you control sort of your destiny that way. I think if I were Chevy, I would probably make a deal sort of with Nick Patan. We have ample forwards, whatever. Maybe work out maybe a couple of different players we could move once we know what they'll be getting. You know, they should be friends with Las Vegas because we're the two last teams that have joined the NHL that way, and it's a good way to maintain a friendship, I think. But one thing Winnipeg can't afford really to do is to lose a defenseman. We're already shy in that area. Like, I don't know if Ben Sherrod is going to be on the list, but if Paul Postma leaves Winnipeg and Ben Sherrod, we sure are going to be shy, guys, and I'll hang up.
Yeah, that's why I go, especially, I just have a feeling, a gut feeling that Enstrom's not waving, and that's why I think they have to go 4-4 and protect the D, just because they have some depth at forward much more than not only the defense, but on that left side. Norm, and I think everybody's friends with Vegas, aren't they? Not maybe the Golden Knights, but everybody's friends with Vegas.
Well, at this point in time, you know, pretty much. But I agree, they can't lose a defenseman, but I think you can get around that going 7-3-1 and making a deal to protect the fourth D that's outside that by sending a prospect and or picks or however, whatever deal you need to make with McPhee to leave that fourth D alone.
Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, text 1290-90. Who's next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line?
Let's get to Hank.
Hank, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm back.
Hey, welcome back, Hank.
To finish off my point from yesterday.
Sure.
This year's final was a study whether a superior defense with arguably an average set of forwards can prevail against an arguably average defense with a superior set of forwards. We know which prevailed. Just because the Jets spend 25% more of their top six does not mean they are capable of playing at the same level as the Preds and Penguins. Either our defensive group lacks the skills to implement the system chosen by Maurice, or the system Maurice and Huddy employ is not suited to the type of players the Jets currently have. As an armchair GM, I strongly lean to the system. The track record of Maurice over the 19 years does not give me any confidence that the results will change with this group. Something has to change.
As in...
Interesting questions.
You mean Maurice?
He'd be at the... So I think what he's saying is you wonder if Peter Laviolette came here and put into place, or Mike Sullivan, what would he extract from this group? Would you be able to bring this group deep into the playoffs?
Well, he could mean personnel, too.
Yeah, one or the other, he's saying.
Yeah, one or the other.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I was asking, if it was just one specific thing or either or.
Yeah, I mean, the comparison, I don't really get the comparison Hank is totally trying to make because, I mean, the Penguins... game plan is to have two of the best centers of the past generation and then a goalie that stops 93% of the shots they face. Like, you kind of forget that you need the goalie, too. It's not like the offensive system trumped the defense, therefore you have to focus solely on forwards. Like that's not really the case of what happened at all.
And with the Penguins, I would also say their depth at forward offset some of the defensive when you compare the two teams as well. Like they don't have the Connor Sheary's and the Russ and the stuff running around here. They could in a few years with the youth. I think it looks promising, but it's an interesting thing. It's going to be an interesting year. We're talking about all this other stuff, but and we leaned on a little bit when we talked extension for Maurice maybe this offseason. It's an interesting first 40 games this year for the Winnipeg Jets. It really is in my mind. We're going to take a break. We'll get more of your calls. 780-1290 on the Big Show. And another buyout taking place in the National Hockey League. We'll tell you about that next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Colorado Avalanche have bought out defenseman Francois Beauchemin's final year of his three-year deal. The cap hit was to be $4.5 million, so it means they'll have to count $1.5 million over the next two seasons on the cap. He's 37 years old, so it's a 35-plus contract, which means it's basically just freeing up a spot on the protection list. Buying out Francois Beauchemin. TSN 1290 is excited for the 2017 Winnipeg Jets Draft Party presented by SportCheck Friday, June 23rd at the Club Regent Event Center. Hosts for the evening are Jets defenseman Josh Morrissey and forwards Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic. All fans in attendance will receive an exclusive 2017 Draft Party giveaway, dinner and beverage, and the chance to win prizes valued at $5,000. Tickets are on sale now. Visit WinnipegJets.com or Ticketmaster.ca. For more information, visit TSN1290.ca. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Todd, you're on the program. Go ahead. Hi, Todd. We lost Todd.
Hey, just real quick, did you guys see that video from Solo at Sega Cell yesterday with Chevy the Darth Vader? I just watched it. It's very funny.
With Luke Skywalker. And
yeah, well done. Very funny.
At Troy Westwood, just retweeted if you wanted to see it. Boss Pizza Fan Line or on text. Text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Brent, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
How's it going this morning, guys?
Good, thanks. You?
Oh, living the dream. Just I just wanted to follow up on what one of the previous callers talked about. Booker Johnson, good. What is that?
You're cutting out, man. We can't hear you.
Yeah, sorry, Brent. You're cutting out. Can you try that again? Maybe move the phone.
Hello?
There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. The previous caller, maybe it was two callers ago, I forget, was talking about mediocre defense and good offense beating good defense and mediocre offense. I'm going to have to say, though, if Rene doesn't have three horrible games in that series, it's probably a different deal.
I think
using small goals, and look what Ottawa did to Pittsburgh, how close that was.
Just real quick here, Rene's save percentage for the series was 888 compared to Murray's 931.
Exactly. Yeah. You need a goal who's above 900 to win a series.
No question.
If you want to hope, right?
Yeah.
And just to follow up on the Conor McGregor versus Mayweather, I know Mayweather is probably the best at defense, but not probably he is. But I'm going to say McGregor is going to be very unorthodox for him. I'm just thinking that maybe of course he has a puncher's chance, but you think that might throw Mayweather off a little bit? With the being an unorthodox boxer, but obviously it's going to leave McGregor with openings that Mayweather will probably exploit. I would never put money on it, but I just think that maybe he has a chance, just with a lucky shot, I guess you'd call it.
I agree 100% with you. With lucky shot, I don't know lucky, but with a shot, right? You just got to land that shot. Very similar to MMA fights. So you just got to, it's always, you land that one shot and look out. He's going to have three rounds to do it before he runs out of gas, probably.
Yeah, and when you say lucky shot in boxing, that's a one in a million shot. I mean, it happens, but against a guy like Mayweather,
I don't think it's going to be a one in a million. I really don't. I think he's good. I wonder the game plan of Conor McGregor's corner is going to be fascinating. You know, because if you go out there with the mindset of, if we don't win this early, we're dead, right? If you get into a boxing match with Floyd Mayweather, they're dead. They know that. Their only chance to win is to go out there and be some sort of tsunami of bomb throwing, right? And you can still protect yourself throwing some of those bombs. That's going to be an interesting thing, though, because you watch Conor McGregor. Naturally, he doesn't protect himself very well when he tries to drop those bombs in the MMA. How high is that right hand of his going to be up when those wild lefts are being tossed out there? And will he be able to corner or get up against the ropes, like somehow stop the movement of Floyd Mayweather? All that stuff's going to be super interesting.
I don't see it. We've spent an entire 49 fights waiting for somebody to touch.
Yeah, and
touch
what was he in all those 49 fights? He was younger. He's 40 years old. At some point in time, that whole age thing catches up to you.
Thanks for the call, Brent. We'll take more of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, when the Big Show returns to TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Pick up your official TSN 1290 discount golf card. Hit the greens throughout the summer with great two-for-one deals at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including Selkirk Golf and Country Club, Minnewasta Golf and Country Club, the Carmen Golf Club, Steinbeck Fly-In Golf Club, and Kingswood Golf and Country Club, just to name a few. Book a tee time, insure your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit TSN1290.ca. Who do you have in the McGregor-Mayweather fight? What would you do if you're the Jets? Whom do you protect and which way do you go? 4-4-1 or 7-3-1? And would you miss your daughter's graduation? Just got a text from Ryan Hart, and he told me that Phil Mickelson's daughter is also giving the commencement speech.
Ooh.
I don't know if that
doesn't
matter. That's probably different, too. That probably like adds another level of you can't miss.
No, it doesn't.
You can tape it.
Your little girl looks at you, the big eyes, Daddy. No, you're done. You're done.
Daddy, I want you to
Daddy,
be...
Daddy, can you please miss winning the U.S. Open? Just one more
yeah,
year.
He's probably happy he doesn't have to chunk one into the fescue and
throw
up a snowman on 18 with a three-shot lead.
Nothing wrong with snowmans.
Yeah.
And anything else you want to talk about on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Rick, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I'd like to see Mayweather and McGregor go up to 12 round blood off and see McGregor come out with a knockout in the last minute. I'd like to see what would happen after.
That would be one of the most remarkable things in the history of sports, if that's the way it plays out. And after, you know what would happen after, huh, pal? There would be one mighty rematch in about 8 months or whatever it'd be.
Yeah, but I wonder if Mayweather would be up to a rematch after, that kind of a fight. His age and everything.
Well, I think so, for another cool $100 million or whatever he's going to make, right?
Yeah, I guess it'd be worth it.
Yeah, they'd reset all the records.
Despite whether that's the fashion it happens or not, I think it's a big story if McGregor wins. Like, just whether it's 12th round or whether it's third round, if he wins, it's...
It'll be the story of the year, sports year. That's the story of the year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. One of the reasons why I said I wasn't too sure until it was officially announced that this would happen is because the whole Manny Pacquiao Mayweather fight too, and that thing took place, but it took place way too late in their careers.
Well, and I don't know necessarily for sure way too late, but Manny Pacquiao, remember he was injured also that he didn't lead on to, and he was just so passive throughout the fight. That's what killed that fight. A healthy Manny Pacquiao will be way more aggressive. And people during the fight were wondering, why is he not throwing more punches? What's going on here? So you got a defensive Mayweather and an injured Manny Pacquiao. That leads to a whole lot of disappointment. The first three rounds of this fight ain't going to be disappointing, right? Like, someone's hitting the floor. Or even like if Conor McGregor lasts that long and gets to 4, 5, 6, at some point in time, you'd think, I just don't see Conor McGregor lasting that long. To me, there's a mistake. The tire, it all comes into play where Mayweather can then knock him out. But the first three rounds are going to be ferocious, one would think.
Rick, thanks for the call on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. You can also text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying to get in on the conversation. Who's next?
We'll get Solomon to hang on, but we'll get to Terry.
Terry, you're on the big show on TSN 1290. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
This match of mixing wrestling and boxing, I don't know if you can recall the Rocky. I was at Rocky 3.
Thunderlips.
Hulk Hogan, Thunderlips, and Rocky Balboa. It's sort of a... You know what I'd like to see? I think it gives an unfair advantage just to have, you know, boxing. How about this? Because this is just pure entertainment. It's really nothing about, the, you know, there's no true sport to this. But how about we have two rounds of boxing, and we go two rounds of MMA, and we go back and forth, and they kind of mix it up, and this way there's not real an advantage. So, because, yeah, obviously, you know, the boxers, just with the skill and technique, could move. And so, you know, to me, is just why not alternate the rounds and say, have at her. And I think that would be more entertainment for me, that's for sure. So, but
Conor McGregor is exponentially closer to being a boxer than Floyd Mayweather is to being an MMA artist. I'll tell you that much.
But true. But I'm thinking, like, this isn't really, you know, is it really sport? This is just, I think this is almost 70% entertainment, 30% sport. Both are great athletes, but you're trying to mix two components that don't really kind of jive well. So, you know, I'm just having fun with it. But
yeah, fair.
It's Thunderlips and Rocky. Maybe that should be the warm-up act.
Yeah,
Conor McGregor, though, he's taking, this is pure sport, man. He's in there. That bell goes off. He's in there to box. He knows what he's doing in that manner. And can you imagine, like, this is a guy that's motivated. He was 4 years ago living in the attic of his parents, and he's on this wild mission here. And anyone that follows UFC knows how he presents himself and how entertaining he is. He wants to go win this, man. Like, can you imagine what he could morph into if he does pull off what would be a big-time upset? But there's no question. Conor McGregor's not screwing around here. This is an entertainment for his from his camp.
I'm not sure McGregor's instincts, as you said, don't kick in. I don't know how you, in the heat of the battle, say you're in the third round of getting pounded, and you're up against the ropes.
Throw don't, a knee. Don't that, your no defense. Biggie.
Yeah, well, just bring your knee up and stuff, like for protection or to tuck. And
but the ref would just break it up and it'd be done. And don't forget, it's not like he's, you know, not just training 8 weeks for this and jumping into the ring. He's been training at boxing for a couple years now. This has been a couple year long process.
All right. I still have Mayweather by a mile.
I'll jump on that.
I don't doubt that happens, but I do think there's an opportunity here for McGregor to shock the world.
I would say that if one person, kind of like Rick was saying there, or sorry, Terry was saying there, that if someone was kind of to take it as more entertainment than pure sporting competition, it would be Floyd. Because he's going to, like, he would be the one to have the outlook of, like, you're not touching me, dude. You're not gonna,
that's when you lose.
That's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. Like, and there's a chance that
there's no way, like, McGregor has, he has everything going for him in this fight. Mm-hmm. He's the underdog. No one expects him to win. Whereas Floyd, like, to lose your only boxing match of your career to a UFC fighter would be, I mean, just think of how many rungs among boxing greats that would knock him down. Like, just untold fall.
I don't know about that. At 40 years old, I don't think it would knock him. It would be a chink in the armor for sure, and it would tarnish his remarkable boxing legacy. But I don't think it would knock him down. I think it would be more about Conor McGregor now straddling this world of MMA and boxing. I find it fascinating. And to say it's not sport, this is exactly what sports is all about, isn't it? I mean, you get an individual trying to take on or learn something new and stepping up into a situation of against a guy that arguably people say is right there with one of the very best, maybe the very best of all time. And you get a guy in Conor McGregor who's like nothing to rise to the level that he has and is wildly aggressive and laser beam focus on what he's trying to accomplish in this world. I love that. And to the whole world saying, you don't have a chance, you idiot. Like, Conor McGregor, really? You're going to tell him that? What kind of response are you going to get?
Yeah, but also, how many guys are told that fought Mayweather anyway? That were boxers. Like, just, you don't have a shot. You don't have a chance. You don't have a... It that's why it is intriguing for sure. Like I'm intriguing. Are you more intrigued to see who will win, or are you more intrigued to see the crossover?
Not the crossover, because I'm not expecting Floyd or Conor McGregor to be in there and be a real sound boxer, like to match the technical skill of Mayweather. No one's expecting that. So the boxing, the fighting, for sure. And it is real important, though, guys, to remember, like, the last time Mayweather knocked somebody out was in 2011. His last seven fights have gone the distance, right? The 12 rounds, and he's won them all in decision. And against fantastic fighters, no question about that. But when you're talking about, like, the man's 40 years old, guys. He's not timeless, right? He's not unaffected by time. At some point in time, you become a little bit slower. Those defensive gifts, I know that those defensive gifts will age well, but his offensive prowess will diminish for sure with the whole 40 thing. So it's just... This is, I think it's super fascinating. And I think Conor McGregor's getting a little bit underestimated in what he might be able to accomplish here.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Solomon, you're on the program. Go ahead. Solomon? Sully? Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, if you wish to weigh in on this discussion and also what you would do as a Jets fan, and who you would protect, and anything else. Of course, the passing of Don Matthews yesterday, 77 years old, to cancer.
This is not a democracy. This is a dictatorship, and I am the head dick. That is the famous quote from Don Matthews. That's up there in all-timers, for sure, in the CFL. That might be the most famous quote in the CFL right there.
Yeah.
Players talked about it for years after it was said.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was.
And he's a guy, JT, that would like to get the guys going, to rile them up. Some of the obscenities and the statements made by doing this and that to the population of the city that you're going into, like old-time type war battle understandings, right? Like he was, like Edmonton, there. This is an ass-kicking contest, and they're supplying the ass. So, like the old-school football mentality, that was Don Matthews.
Yeah, no, he was a beauty. Oh, yeah. And you know, it's interesting because, and we're not just saying this now that he's passed, but when you say these things, he was a beauty. Like, he was tough, that's what made him a beauty. Like, he was, and I've never...
Disliked and hated in some circles. And
yeah.
Some, you know... The whole, he's got as many wedding rings as he does Grey Cup rings. Like, he lived off the field hard, on the field hard. He was
the part of his legacy I don't get is how you as a coach date some of your players' former girlfriends. And I'm not talking about just
It's a two-way street.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, that's... Talk about conflict of interest.
Well, is it?
And I'm not just talking about the 30-year age difference between...
I wonder, it would have been funny to be in the locker room when that goes down.
I forget who it was. It was an Argonaut or an Alouette who's like literally said, yeah, you got to lock up your girlfriends around Don or something like
and
that.
And
like
anyone, you know, male or female, we all know crazy things happen in the whole realm of love in locker rooms. Like you just never know, man.
That's a whole other show.
Yeah.
Back to Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Greg.
Greg, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Actually, this is a little bit perhaps geared towards Brandon, but last Friday he was talking about Philadelphia and their second overall pick and such. And I started thinking, if Jersey goes with Heischer and Philly's on the clock and the phone rings and they hear, hey, guys, it's Chevy, I might have something for you. Provorov and your second for Trouba, our 13th, and Ross Levick. No?
As soon as you said Provorov, I almost nixed it right there, but...
Provorov for Trouba you wouldn't be interested in?
And Nolan Patrick? You're talking about you're basically your number one D-man for the future and your number one center for the future.
For a number one right-handed D-man for the future, a really decent player in Roslovic and another really decent player at 13.
Well, Roslovic hasn't done anything yet in the NHL.
Well, 1 year in the AHL, and he led his team in scoring, and he's...
It's a center, though.
20. Mm-hmm.
Philly needs centers.
Philly
they're taking one. I don't know. I think Nolan Patrick's ceiling is exponentially higher than what Jack Roslovic's is, though Roslovic's is he'll be a solid NHL player, but Nolan Patrick has number one. Like, he is labeled as a franchise number one centerman.
You make a great point. You have your D-men already, and you're getting a centerman, so you're just trading centerman and
like, why
D-men.
Take the risk if you're Philly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, other than Philly has, what, 17 left-handed defensemen?
Yeah, but that's like most teams in the NHL, though, right?
Yeah.
Well, not most.
They make it work. But no, it was something that sort of popped into my head that I thought was an interesting topic of conversation.
It is interesting. It is, because do you think Provorov will be better than Trouba?
That's hard to say after 1 year.
Yeah.
Like
I would give Trouba the edge there, but it's the left-hand, right-hand side thing.
Well, you can give Trouba the edge all you want, but the fact of the matter is, and what makes the trade, I think what Greg is thinking about this trade, are you going to be able to sign Trouba?
Well, you're assuming that going to the American team on the East Coast.
That's a big thing. Here,
that would have to be part of the deal, I would think.
Yeah, and I'm sure that would be okayed by Trouba's camp. But there's a lot more risk in the Philly side of that trade than there would be in the Winnipeg side.
And then the other part of that would be is, do you think Patrick would be better than Roslovic eventually? Like, that's the other
eventually,
part of the...
He might be better
out
now.
Out of the gate.
Might be better now, and he has even played a pro game.
Roslovic just literally led his American Hockey League team in scoring. And you think he's better than Nolan Patrick right now?
Yes.
Or you think Nolan Patrick's better than him right now?
Well, I'd certainly take Patrick in a blink over him at this point in time, no?
Is Jack Roslovic going to be an NHLer next year? Likely not. Nolan Patrick,
no question.
Well, barring injury, step right into whatever lineup he's taken in and will play a pretty significant role.
You think so? You think Nolan Patrick, with not even 40 games in the dub this year, is going to walk into an NHL
but it's
roster.
Not like he's only played 40 dub games. Like he had a 100 and,
right?
What was it, 115 point season as a 17-year-old?
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, you think that a guy who led his American Hockey League team in scoring as a rookie is not as good as a rookie coming out of the dub after an injury-filled season? You do, eh?
Correct.
Okay, I'm just asking. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. More of your calls when we come back to The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The Big Show on TSN 1290. It is Blue Bomber Game Day. Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber Game Day starts with our programming at 5:30. Troy Westwood will be in with Darren Bombing, the host, and Mr. Chris Walby. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, or text us at 1290-90 right now with standard message rates applying to get in on the conversation. To the fan line we go. The Boss Pizza Fan Line. Bob, you're on the Cosmic Bob, how are you?
I saw the bat spotlight in the sky.
And you knew to call.
That's right.
It's a big picture of your head with a dart in your mouth.
That's right. Yes, just put one out. But I did have a couple of questions for you, Jim, Troy, and Brandon.
Go ahead.
And go blue, of course. What would Coach Jose do to keep them aware during the bye? Because it's a long bye, right?
That's a better question for Troy.
Well, I don't think they need to keep them aware, Bobby. Everyone's going to be filled with the anticipation of the excitement of early season, right? Where everyone's got the you got the Grey Cup in your head. They're thinking that, and like everyone's excited to get going. There's going to be no shortage of attention, I think, and making sure that they're all in a position to perform at the highest level possible come July 1st or whatever it is, yeah.
So they're going to have game on game day.
Oh, yeah. The only thing is that I think you have to, you know, being excited and being ready to play is different from being performing execution at a high level, right? And that might be
a subtle difference.
Yes, and that might be a little bit like they may struggle or stumble out of the gate here on that Saturday, July 1st game. That's a possibility, but that's what the coaches will try and overcome with the prep leading up to it.
They may stumble, and they may not. And here's my second one.
is this going to be a huge test for Coach O'Shea? Because this will disrupt his itinerary. He's a very routine-minded guy, right? Or is that just me, you guys?
No, all coaches, everyone involved. I think in pro sports, there's a level of almost militaristic routine that gets incorporated. And there's no question. That's why I was saying to me, like, they play tonight, and then I'd come back for, like, give them tomorrow off, Friday, and then maybe you practice as if you were prepping for another game Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and then maybe give them 4 or 5 days off, but get them back practicing for the 26th, and then 4 days of prep before the day before the game. So I think that they will put some level of routine within this bye week.
And of course, I know you're going to, it's shutdown time, but, like, would they ever play a junior team just to kind of keep their hands on?
No, you know, if they ever played a junior team, Bobby, kids would get hurt like you wouldn't believe. That would be an impossibility.
Yeah, and you risk the injury to the Bombers, too.
The Bombers wouldn't get hurt. They would. The level of destruction would be, you wouldn't want to see that for the kids.
Coach O'Shea was saying that his goal is to just not look too far ahead, like take it day by day, make every day the same. And then he said also just to, you know, they have a plan to manage it, just keeping things as similar as they would as if it was a bye in week 8 or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm kind of getting at, where he just, you know, practice a little bit and then give them that time, like the 3-4 days off, whatever, and then get them back in for a four. You either practice 3 days or 4 days in advance of a game, and when there's a lot of time between like this, typically it turns into 4 days.
Great stuff, Cosmic Bob. Always good to hear from you. And thanks to Greg and everybody else who weighed in on the Boss Pizza fan line and texting us at 1290-90. We appreciate the participation, as it is the hour meant for you, the listeners. TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for MTS Super Spike July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. Registration is now open, and event tickets for non-participants are on sale now. Taking the stage this year, of course, is multi-award-winning Sam Roberts Band, and all the proceeds from this event will be supporting Kids Sport and the True North Youth Foundation. More information is online at tsn1290.ca, and we have a pair of tickets for you right now. 12th caller through at 780-1290. You'll be off to Super Spike this July. We'll be back tomorrow morning. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening, and the Big Show will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.